Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Carpcast. How are we doing, Mark?
Oh, not bad. Is it episode 39, or shall we just call it 40?
There are some people out there, one in particular I can think of, a very well-known angler, who's a few years back, maybe has since, but a few years back, he had never had a 39-pound carp. And conspiracy theorists might say, in fact, I'm pretty sure I heard it from his own mouth, a 39-pounder is not worth any articles and a 40-pounder is. Although fish have got a bit bigger now. It's probably 49 and 50 these days. But
yeah, should we use that joke again in 10 episodes?
Yes, we can. It's probably more relevant, but when a 40-pound carp got you on a front cover or certainly got you an article if you're a well-known angler, then certain unscrupulous people never caught any 39-pound carp.
How many 39s have you had?
I think too many.
The needle has just not gone far enough.
I probably had the one I would have dearly wanted to be 40. A few years back, I decided I wanted to catch a Lancashire, my home county is Lancashire, and I wanted to catch a Lancashire 40 pounder, of which there were two. And I hunted, after years of travelling down south, I just wanted to catch a 40 from home county because there hadn't been any previously, and there were now two. Fish known as Mr. Angry from Manchester Park Lake, and there was another one called the Half Lynn, sadly deceased, now in Deadmans in Manchester, right in the centre of Ghettosville. And it came out at 44, a guy called Tudge, a very well known Northwest old school angler. He had it like 44-pound in October. I lost it at the net after an epic fight in the end of November, and we had a super mild winter that year, so it was no smaller than 44. Lost it at the net, saw the fish, played it for ages, had it on for a good 15 minutes, and the hook flew out nearly at me in the face in the deep margin. I fished a few times over that winter, caught pretty consistently, and then in February I landed it and it was 39-12. So
but you weren't bothered in the slightest, though.
I wasn't bothered. Well, I was only on there to catch a Lancashire 40. Obviously, I caught the fish. I caught one of two fish that could have been 40 pound, and it wasn't. So that was 50% of it gone. I actually caught that fish again in the summer. I braced it with the other big one in that lake called Hamlet, which is also dead now. But fortunately, a couple of years later, I did end up catching the other one, Mr. Angry, at what was a Lancashire record at the time, if you don't include large imported fish. 44 something, I think it was. It was a Lancashire record anyway when I caught it.
There's footage of that on YouTube, ain't there?
There is, yeah. If you Google Lancashire record, Mr. Angry, or me, you'll find it. There's actually somebody videoed me playing the fish, and it's all the landing it and
Following screams.
photo. There was quite a few people there. It was like tea time on a busy park lake because a few of my friends were there. It was really nice. Really nice experience, about the best way I could have caught that fish. And it is a very special fish that it was like once every couple of years it used to get caught. Well, still to this day.
A bit of a funny one, that.
Yeah.
I mentioned 39s, you know, going back a long time. I told the girlfriend back then, that we'd get married if I ever caught a 40, thinking that I'd never even fish for them. So, I know you know the story, but I went down chasing the twin round Elstow 2 for a couple of seasons, finally caught it at 39.5 pound. The wife accused me of lying about the weight.
Yeah.
It's usually the other way around.
Yeah, well, we've downplayed ours. It's like, I told the missus, she wants to get married, I told her if I get a poker score, because obviously weddings are expensive, if I get a poker score... what did I say? I think it was above 20 grand. And I had a 25 grand. And I was like...
Oh, dear, mate.
I was like, listen, I sold half the action. Only half of it's mine. So even though I cashed for 25 grand, like somebody else had bought half of it. So they got 12 and a half grand. So I've actually only cashed for 12 and a half grand, not 25. Even though, you know, if you look it up, it says 25. Which is the truth. That is the case.
Does she accept your... technicality escape?
Well, yes. I mean, she knows I only got 12 and a half grand because she spent the bloody thing. But, but like, you know, it's the figure. I cashed for 25 grand. But so I had to, renegotiate. It's when I physically get 20 grand. I had a $23,000 as well, which isn't £20,000 sterling. So
you're flirting with it there. You're going to get it one day, then there's no escape.
Yeah, I'll just stop playing poker now. No, I would get married, but I wouldn't get married until I can actually afford it. We diverse as we normally do. But yeah, what have we got? What have you been up to? You been fishing?
Yeah. No, I've been covering a holiday at work. Today was my 10th day on the bounce, and I've got another two to do. But here's something that we should have mentioned, maybe a couple of weeks back. But mine have come through the post today. Fishing licences.
Ah, yes. I never have to remember to buy them, because many years ago, I forget how we do it. I mean, it's the post office that do it, but I sure did it online. And it was the first year you could buy them online. I bought them online and ticked some box that said, do you want it to automatically renew? And I get three letters off them. One comes in like February and another one like a month later. And then the licenses turn up about a week. I think they turned up about a week to 10 days ago. I don't even open the envelopes, to be honest. I just know that I've got them because I get these letters from the Environment Agency that always look the same every year. So, yeah. So you don't ever get caught out. Automatic renewal. You can do it through the post office website. Don't get caught without a license. And for those of you who think you shouldn't have to buy a license, you should. There are lots of things that EA do that you probably don't even know about. And they get a bad rep, but they have a lot to do. And it's not much that we have to pay. I mean... there's an argument as to why we need a license. You know, maybe there should be an EA tax. That's a different question. Why should, you know, lots of people use water, as in the facilities, you know, lakes and, you know, for other things than fishing, and they don't have to pay. So maybe the whole system should be restructured. But at the minute, the anglers subsidise the EA, and that's the way it is. So we should be buying them. And there will be a three rod license next year, which we already spoke about quite a few shows ago when they announced it. Whether it will actually be any less money,
I'm sure they'll will still be paying, but it's the law. If you don't get one, you get caught, you've got to pay a lot more, so it's a no-brainer.
And you'll have a criminal record. I mean, it isn't civil, it is an actual criminal offence to go fishing without a rod license. So you know, it can affect you getting jobs in the future. If you actually do get genuinely nicked for something else and they go, well, we would have let you off, it was your first offence, but you can't have a caution because you've already got a criminal record, as happened to somebody that I know. They got caught doing something pretty minor and would have got a caution, and they when they looked it up, they went, oh, we can't caution you, you've got a criminal record. They went, no, I haven't. They went, you have. You were caught fishing without a rod licence. And they ended up getting shafted for criminal offences to remain unnamed.
Oh, I didn't know it was. I know you got the hefty fine, but I didn't know it went on your record.
It does. So yes.
Buy one.
Yeah,
or buy two even.
Two if so you use more than two rods, yes.
Yeah. So what have you been doing apart from creating new jingles and stuff?
Made some jingles and made some new drops that I didn't put in just yet. Yeah, right. But. I've not been fishing. I fished last week, but I think we spoke about that on the last show, didn't we? I just had one 25 pounder. I've got tons of decorating on, and I've got loads of new goodies. I put in an order for some bait, some bits and bats, and it's all turned up today. I'm looking. The missus is going to go mad when she comes in from work because there's just boxes everywhere. I've got loads of bits and bats of end tackle that I needed. Thought I was getting trade packs of each, so I've got one pack of hooks. We've all got one of each thing. I'll tell you what did arrive today. You might have seen them advertised over the last few weeks, but the Avid bobbins, have you seen those?
Some down at Five Lakes had a little play. What do you reckon to them?
I love them. I was in the market for some new bobbins. I've had the Fox ones for quite a while. There's some new Nash ones coming out later in the year, which I saw the prototypes of, which I quite like the look at. But in the meantime, I was without any decent bobbins or ones that like are real. By decent bobbin, you know, when we speak about versatility of an item, stuff like, you know, in an ideal world, we'd have a set of soft rods, we'd have a set of medium rods, and we'd have a set of long chucking rods, wouldn't we? And we'd, you know, depending on if we're fishing down the canal, we'd be using the short soft ones. I mean, I do have a set of 9-foot scopes, to be fair, now, that I use for all my sneaky stuff and short session stuff. But generally, we kind of have to make do with one item. You know, like, we have a 42-inch landing net. If we go down the river and fish for chub, we probably take the 42-inch landing net because not everybody has multiple sets of gear. So we always look for the best equipment that covers, like, loads of uses. You know, there's no point having a, you know, 4.5-pound test curve, super pokey chucking rod, and then, you know, you join a lake that's 2 acres the year after and it's underarm flicks, and, you know, you've probably got a rod that's a little bit too stiff, land, you know, when most of your fish playing is at close range and stuff. So we look for stuff that does the job, and I look at, you know, those stow bobbins that everyone uses. They're a one trick pony, you know, that they were invented on Elstow, as you know. That's where they get their name, Stowes. They're invented on Elstow. There's a chap on there whose name you probably know, who invented those. They basically invented them for fishing slack lines in deep water. That's what it was invented for. And they became a fashion item because Corda is so good at marketing. And I see people using them in all sorts of situations. They're just not designed for, you know, that they're... I've seen people using them on tiny little short chains, and, you know, they get a liner and it pings the bloody bobbin out. Like, you don't know if you've had a screamer or what when your bobbin's on, you know, especially if you've, like, been in your bivvy, it's shucking down with rain, you come out and your bobbin's on the deck and you're like, what's happened? There's so many reasons I'm not going to go into. You know, they're a fantastic slack line indicator, is what they were used for. Not that I think slack lines have much use on most lakes. They do on Elstow because, you know, it's 40 foot deep in places and you want your line dropping nice and slack, and there ain't much weed between you and the spots because it's a 40 foot deep clay pit. They're not a bobbin you can use in all situations, right? So I've wanted a bobbin that is, that you can use when, you know, it's quite, that goes quite heavy for long range. Anyway, these Avid ones, I've rambled quite a bit to get to the point, but these Avid ones, they come with a short chain, a long chain, they come with two two weights, two different weights, a big and a small one. They come with two bodies, you know, like the middle bit, a short one and a long one. And they come with two different types of heads, one that will lock the line in, you know, for slackline fishing and stuff, much like the stows and all that. And it's actually the one of the heads does the one where it locks the line in, like the stows, and it does like a normal... you know, like the two ball type running one. And then there's a separate head which is just a running one, which is adjustable tightness. It's got like the rubber around it, you know, like the little rubber band that you see around the top of the two little bally things. So two bodies, two weights, two different types of tops, and two lengths of chain. Like, it's fantastic. That is the most versatile bobbin I've ever seen, and I chose the yellow ones, which I don't know if you noticed. They're like, you know, that day glow fluorescent yellowy colour, which I made the mistake when they do like a purple colour, which same as the Fox slicks, are they called the black slicks or something? I had the purple ones in the Fox, and because they look really sexy and quite trendy, but you just can't see them if you're stood, like, you know, a couple of rod lengths behind your rod or whatever, and you're glancing at them. They just don't, you know, they're too cool. They're a bit subtle. Whereas these bright yellow things, I mean, they're fluorescent. At the end of the day, you want to be able to glance out your bivvy at the rod. You know, you get a couple of beeps and you glance at your bobbin to see what's happened. You want it as obtrusive as possible, don't you?
Yeah, I was just looking for the brightest washing up liquid bot tops.
Roger Bacon, who we speak about on this show, is probably listening to this. He makes his own bobbins, and he always has a bit of a crazy setup, but usually extremely practical, and he's not too fussed about what stuff looks like. But he's actually made his own like chains, but it's not chains, it's fluorescent yellow elastic, and these three things hang from his pod thingy. They're quite long as well. They hang from his pod, and then they, you know, he's like custom made like split rings on the end that connect to like different types of bobbins that he uses. And then they look crazy. Everybody walks into his swim and looks at them and goes, "What on earth are they?" But super practical. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be in the bushes having a dump or whatever, and you can glance over to your rods and you can see exactly what's going on with your bobbins. And then that's the first thing I thought when I saw these yellow hangers. I was just like,
"You're going to be able to see them while having a dump?"
Yeah,
that's what sprung into your mind.
Well, I'm trying to think of reasons to be off your rods that, you know, won't get us shot down by the EA. But as we know, sometimes we're not always right next to our rods.
So defecating in the open air in nature is okay.
It specifically says on your rod license you must be within, is it 6 feet, 8 feet of your rods, except for calls of nature. It specifically says it. I'm trying to be politically correct.
So you can walk around the other side of the lake.
Well, at the end of the day, like, you're going to see Roger's fluorescent yellow elastics from the other side of the lake if you so happen to be there. You know, you'd left your mate looking after your rods or something. But anyway, yeah, these avid ones in yellow, it's a great colour, and why anybody would have any other colour. Well, I do know why, because they want to look good, but for practicality, they're yellow ones. But yeah, I really like them. There's a true review for you. Those avid bobbins, I like them a lot.
True review.
Yeah, does it do a red one?
I know they do a purple one, the same as that. I'm sure it was in Matthew Wood. Someone put a picture of all the colours up not long back. But I think they've just come into stock in the country. I know there's a few people I've spoke to who've got them on back order. But if you have ordered them, you should get them this week. Because I believe they have them now. Well, they must have, because I'm looking at a set of four. But yeah, true review on the Avid Bobbins. I really like them a lot.
Okay, the other question, because I've not really... I've seen them, but I've not really taken one note. Do you think they're going to do a Springer arm? Because I'll be honest, I'm sold on that sort of indication now.
I tell you what, yes, for Ziggs, but my mate Dave, he's been using the Fox ones, the same as what I've been using, the slick black things. He's been using them with the Springer arms. And he's been having some trouble with bite indication. You know, fishing like normally, they're absolutely essential if you're fishing zigs and stuff, as it's zig time of year. But he's been using them for like normal things. I forget what he said, but Oh yeah, it was, we were fishing on Cromwell over Christmas time, New Year, and we were getting liners and stuff, and I don't think the bobbin was reacting as good. It was, I think there's like a, because they're keeping total pressure on the line, you know, keeping it kind of bowstring, it wasn't reacting well to liners. We're getting a few like odd beeps and occurrences. So again, Springer arms, use them at extreme range. I think use them where you really need to know, yeah, you know, what's going on. But I don't think, again, Springer arms should be used like all the time. But no, that's a good question. Mr. Avid, let us know, are you going to do Springer arms for them? The other great thing about this Avid thing, which is an absolute bonus, obviously they come with the normal hockey stick type thing that you screw your buzzer into, and obviously screw the chain into the thingy, but they are one of the only sets of hangers I've seen that screw direct into the front of the Nash R3 alarms. I thought only Nash did hangers, because the Fox ones don't. They're like, you know, like the male and female are the wrong way round for the Fox ones.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So you can't screw them into the Nash buzzers, but these Avid ones you can, which has pleased me greatly. I was like a kid in a toy shop. I was just like, wow, they do everything I want a bobbin to do.
Did you get all excited?
I'm excited now. I'm looking at all my new bits here, thinking I want to go fishing, and I've got 4 weeks decorating and modernising my house before I can move back in it.
You're not on the bank for over a month?
I will be. I've actually booked a trip on the 11th, which is a week on Monday, for 5 days. Going to be fishing Monday to Friday, in a new part of the country, somewhere. I'm going to I found a lake that I really like to look up.
I'll be straight after the Cromwell Social then.
Yes, I'm probably going to go straight from there. Oh yeah, Cromwell Social. Obviously, we'll be fishing there.
Yeah, don't be forgetting that.
Yeah, well, Cromwell's done a 44 this week. Or did we mention that on last week's show?
I think we did Hardy at 43, I think it was.
Yeah, 44.
Either way, another big one, and it is up in weight, which
going to be some big weights this spring, isn't there?
Oh yeah, I mean, what's the parrot going to do?
Yeah, well, we predicted it months ago, didn't we? Terry Hearn's going to catch it at 70.
Yeah, have you got been down the bookies? Had a little flutter on it?
No, I don't know if the bookies know who Terry Hearn is, or the fish.
That wouldn't be a bad bet.
I bet you could get odds on a £70 carp this spring. I bet they wouldn't be great, though.
Yeah, I don't know of many bookies. Mind saying that, I'm not a betting man anyway. I've just been giving money away. I get the odd lottery ticket, win nothing, and then don't buy another one for a month.
Yeah. I tell you what, what's gone down well this week is I've had loads of messages and feedback from various people about the Hydro Wheat liquid that DNA Baits do. Holmes's liquid talk on last week's show has gone down an absolute storm, hasn't it? I've had lots of conversations with lots of different people. So much so, I'm a little bit annoyed that we even put it out. I should have just kept that interview till about October, and then put it out, because I'd already planned to do some liquidy stuff. And then, as Mark said in the interview, the edges are few and far between these days. And I think it is such an edge. I mean, I was chatting with Roger Bacon today about it, and he was talking about lake that he runs, and a lot of it is fishing to the far margin. You can only fish one side of the lake, and there's a few pegs that only you can fish because it's out of casting range for most people, and he's a pretty good caster. There's a few people on there that can maybe get close to it, but they tend to leave that peg alone, and it's just perfect. You're allowed around the other side of the lake at dusk and dawn to bait up, because obviously it's like a catapult throw to bait up from the opposite side, or it's like 140 yards from, you know, casting, which is great because you only got to get your hook baits over there, and you can walk around on dawn and dusk and throw some bait and
sling your coke bottle full of
slinging he's getting 2 5-litre bottles on a bit of rope, so he can just underarm them out and leave them out there. And I've suggested that we get a GoPro and we actually video what's going on. It's the perfect place to test it, to be honest. So I'm really looking forward to doing that. I haven't got a membership for that lake anymore. I'm going to get one in the future, but It's a really good place for testing stuff like that. So I'm quite interested in seeing. What were the two main liquids Mark was talking about? He was talking about like an alcoholic fermented type thing, such as the hydro wheat and sugar, was it?
Hydro wheat, the old corn steep liquor, that's an old favourite he mentioned. But the main one I can remember is the hydro. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again.
Well, you can get the hydro.
And again.
You can, yeah, I had a message of someone today actually saying they'd listened to the Holmesy thing three times now since it came out, which is only like 5 days ago, and it was pretty mind blowing. It's off the wall. Yeah, I'd like to ask Daryl Peck what he thinks of Holmesy's crazy idea. But to be fair, this is not crazy. I mean, everything we spoke about last week, it's not, you know, it's not as crazy as live baiting for carp or, you know, any of the other edges that Holmes has got. I mean, it's straight up logic. I mean, it makes complete sense. I'd seen it with my own eyes, as I spoke about with the, you know, with the ice cream, melted vanilla ice cream, the water, the carp went crazy in it. So it's really logical as to why it would work, and I bet very few people are doing it because of the delivery. And there was so much good stuff in that interview. If you haven't heard last week's show, then you need to check it out. And you can get most of the stuff Holmesy was talking about from dnabaits.com, and you can get a discount on it as well. Use the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout for an extra 5% discount. Other than all the fantastic liquids that they do and the hydro wheat, they do boilies, do some extremely good boilies. Do the S7, which is a secret blend of more than 7 spices. I remember Jason Trout told us when he came on the show over Christmas. You can get the Nutter S, the SLK, the Ocean X, or the brand new Switch. And they do post-free deals where you get 250ml bait soak, you get a tub of pop-ups or wafters, and you get a boilie of your choice, one of the ones we mentioned, and 3 kilo of matching pellets or stick mix. And they're post-free to your door. Have a look on the website, dnabaits.com. Use the code CARPCAST5 and you'll get an extra discount on everything. They do Zig deals where you get Spod Mix and Sticky Sweet Liquid, Fox Zigger liners, again post free to your door for £30. They do Fluoro pop-up deals. They're a fantastic company. We're happy having dnabaits.com as a sponsor of the show because they do some quality gear and they seem like all-round nice guys, so please support them because they support us and they keep this show free. And we know there's a few adverts from time to time. That's how we can afford to put a 2-3 hour show out every single week. So we appreciate it if A, you support them, and B, you just don't turn off when we ramble. And like I say, we try and keep some informative stuff within the advert. We're going to get some DNA baits consultants on to give you some baiting tips while, you know, in the middle of the advert, so it's not too boring for you to listen to. And I'll tell you what else happened this week, Mark.
Go on, what happened?
It's the end of the month. Today is April Fool's Day. We'll talk about April Fool's in a minute. But we hit 30,000 downloads this month, which is unreal. I've been telling people for weeks that we do like 20 to 25,000 because I haven't actually totted up all the figures recently. I had a look, as you know, a couple of days ago, and we were already just over 30,000 downloads for the month of March, with a couple of days still to go and a new show having just come out. That is unreal. I mean, I want to thank all the people that support us, all the people that listen. 30,000 downloads a month is a lot.
It is a lot. Now, without actually checking, I'm going to say that will take us over the 200,000 total. Next step is going to be the 1 million total.
Yeah, well, 500,000 first. Let's head for
Let's go for the big one. I want a party.
Well, if we continue to do 30,000 a month, we're in month 4 of this year now. There are this month and 8 more. So that's 9 times 30,000 is 270,000 on top of the... Yeah, well, I think we should have just hit it by New Year. By January the 1st, I think we'll have just hit 500,000 downloads. Approximately. Obviously, we're going to grow. We are growing. People seem to like the show. And as I said, please, you know, a way of supporting us and guaranteeing that we keep this show going is to support the people that sponsor it. DNABaits.com are one of them. We do have a slot now. St. Armand Leisure, who... is our friends Christophe and Lee, who have a lake in France. It's a fantastic lake in the south of France near Limoges. They are fully booked for this year, except for one cancellation, which has just cropped up now. Christophe texted me and asked if I'd give it a mention. It is the 4th of June, which is the only week available between now and November. They normally close in November, but they will add a couple of weeks on if anybody does want to go back end of the year, because the place is fantastic. We've got a few of our listeners that have booked, well, lots of our listeners have booked trips there this year. And one of them's going to be doing a video diary and audio in session for us. He's there in the middle of May, so we will have some live on the bank stuff from St. Amand. But yeah, there is a week. I mean, you can check our previous Carpcast for the full info on St. Amand, but there is a week on the 4th of June that I said I'd mention. Should anybody want a last minute trip, it's £850. You can take two families, you get your own private lake, private farmhouse, etc., etc. But it just shows how successful the Carpcast is. They've never sold that lake out. I mean, they've never advertised it before, and they've sold every week this year, and they've added an extra month onto what they normally do. So it shows that advertising on the Carpcast works. We're growing and growing, and there is a space for the right company to sponsor us. It's probably cheaper than you think. It definitely works, as St. Amand can show you. We don't want to endorse just any old something that we wouldn't use ourselves. So, you know, it has to be, I mean, how would you describe it, Mark? It's got to be something that's quality, or something that, you know, we know is a great company stroke product. You know, we don't want Billy Joe making cheap bait out of his garage. You know, we're not gonna advertise that. It might be great bait, but we just can't say, you know, I can't put my reputation on the line and say yeah use this stuff, it's great, if I don't know. So, you know, it's no disrespect to anybody making bait out of the shed, but you would have to be recommended to us, or we would have to know it's great stuff.
Basically, we're going to maintain a bit of integrity.
If it's
good, if it's stuff that you know we'd use and we'd be happy to use, and we know it's you know good, and the good people behind it, we'll happily rant on about it.
Yes, yeah, we shall. So there is a space. We don't want, you know, some people say there's too many adverts in the show already. We do about 20 minutes to half an hour of adverts in a 2.5 hour show. That's the small price to keep the show free, the weekly one. Keep it every week and free. So we do ask that you support the people that support us. And then, like I said, if you want to advertise on the Carpcast, get in touch with myself or Mark, and we'll give you some prices and have a chat with you and see what it is you want to do.
So you've got me, you've got my curiosity. You mentioned April Fool's Day. Has somebody got you? Have they wound you in?
No. I've seen a few on the net. I've not seen any fishing related ones.
It's on the net. It must be true.
We are recording on April Fool's Day, but by the time you hear this, it'll probably be April the 2nd. Otherwise, we'd have maybe done one ourselves. If we'd have been a bit more organised, I guess we could have recorded this on Thursday to put it out on April Fool's Day.
What would we have done?
I don't know.
April Fool's, Mark's caught a 50. April Fool's, Jamie Blanks.
I don't know. Have you seen any good ones?
Yeah, I seen Eric's Angling did quite a good one on their page, which I think fooled a few people. They made a bit of a press release of a Shimano reel that they've been keeping under wraps. It was the 14,000 AFD reel with all these different features, how it adjusts its own drag for you.
When you're playing a fish.
Winds fishing for you. Did you see the Corda video they did as well?
No, I've not. I've been decorating all day, stripping wallpapers. I've not been on the net at all.
That was a good one, isn't it? It's done as a genuine video where Danny's down, I think he's at Corcut's, one of the embryo lakes, and he starts demonstrating this whistle that attracts carp to your swim.
Yeah.
Can you just imagine everyone around a busy day ticket lake with carp whistles?
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it.
If it's not an April Fool, I want one.
Yeah. I've had a few press releases this week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've had them come through to you. One of them's about the England ladies team. I didn't even know we had an international championship coming up, but we do. There's a Bev Clifford sent me this from Carp Talk, and she's in the picture, so I'm assuming she's in the team. Rob Hughes is sat in the middle, so I'm presuming he's manager. But the squad has been announced, that names a team that will represent England in the forthcoming Ladies International Carp Fishing Competition. England's Lionesses will face a female Welsh squad on home ground in a historic event, which is the first ever all-ladies carp fishing international comp. What do you think about that, Mark? An all-ladies international carp fishing comp?
I think that's great stuff. We've got some cracking lady anglers, as we know from our feature we did a while back.
Yeah.
And I think we'll win.
Miranda Brown is manager of the squad. She announced, "We're really looking forward to this competition. Months of planning, ready. Immensely proud to be pulling on an England shirt and representing our country." The girls held a practice at Barston Lakes, where the squad for the forthcoming friendly with Wales was finalised. Angling Trust Carp Team England boss Rob Hughes said the girls are a formidable squad and they're immensely passionate. This competition against Wales is history in the making. The first ever ladies only international event in carp fishing. It's hoped it'll encourage more ladies to participate and eventually lead to a full international world championships. Which I think is great. It's absolutely fantastic.
And brilliant.
They've been on Talk Sport, they've been on Radio 2 with Sarah Cox. I didn't even know she was on Radio 2 now. She's on Radio 1 last time I listened to her.
She must be getting old. That's what happens when Radio 1 presenters get old. They get shuffled to Radio 2.
Yeah, and a bit of home country's rivalry, Wales v England. We like a bit of that, don't we? So yeah, it's all good. Just while we're on the press releases, Johnny Robbins has been in touch. This is going to open a can of worms, to be fair. The can of worms being every single little charity event anywhere messaging us trying to get on the show. Being a DJ for many years, I've fell into this trap many times where you announce something, can you just announce my mate's birthday over the mic? And it's the worst thing you can do. As soon as you do it, there's a queue of people wanting you to say stuff over the mic, and you'd basically never play a track again. You'd just be doing announcements for people, which ruins the night for everybody. And for that same reason, we don't want to ruin our show with tons and tons of charity requests. I'm going to do this one. And I think maybe we'll do one a month.
I think that's fair. I mean, we already get quite a few requests. And, I'd love to be able to support every single one of them. But
we would like to, wouldn't we? It's just impossible. It's going to ruin the show. Generally, if there's something significant going on, we'll pick up on it if it's in the news anyway. But basically, this particular one is the annual Castaway Cancer event, and it takes place on the 8th to the 10th of April. It's Castaway Cancer's third event, and after raising £23,000 so far for Macmillan Cancer and Support since the charity was founded, that's why we've done this one. It seems like a pretty decent one. They've raised a load of money. The organisers are confident this year will be another huge success. Packington Fisheries Broadwater Carp Syndicate will be the host, and the events it takes place in the event of a 48-hour carp match where 20 anglers will participate. The person who raises the most amount of sponsorship money will fish with Daryl Peck for the duration of the match. We've also got Joe Turnbull, Chris Appleby and Jimmy, it says Hibbard, I'm assuming it's Hubbard, will be...
it's Hibbard.
Is it?
Yeah,
Jimmy Hibbard.
He's a scunthorpe lad. He's from up our way. He works in Chapman's.
Ah.
And he can catch a few.
They're doing tuitions all weekend anyway. And Saturday, 1 p.m. the gates are open to the public, so you can go down, watch, support, chat to everybody. There's a fundraising barbecue, there's loads of prizes, raffles and stuff, and you can pick the brains of Daryl Peck, Joe, Chris and Jimmy, as they'll be there to answer any questions. Tracker in attendance, they're bringing you can have a look at a load of their new gear, but bivvies, brollies, shelters, beds and sleeping bag and luggage, and Foster's of Birmingham are going to be supporting the event as well. They're going to be there, you'll be able to buy some bits and bats, and they'll have loads of offers on. So it's for Macmillan Cancer Support. It sounds like it's really well organised, this particular one. Whoever raises the most sponsorship money is going to fish with Daryl, and it's at Packington Fisheries Broadwater Carp Syndicate, and it's the 8th to the 10th of April. If you have an event, we will do one a month, as we said. We're going to have to cherry pick, which means some people are not going to get on. But, you know, if you're established, if you've been doing it a while and you've got a proven track record, then we'll happily give you a mention. Please send all inquiries to Mark.
Thank you.
You can sift through them because we're already...
I can be contacted by messaging Jamie.
Yeah. Shall we have a look on the net? What have you seen?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, it is one we had a chat about the other day. That's you know, seems to crop up every now and then. And this time is a young Alfie Russell. Well, Alfie Ralph, as he calls himself. He's been given a bit of stick for a photograph of one of his that appeared in an article. Now, if you've not seen it, this in this photo, Alfie is holding one carp with another three on the mat at his knees.
Yes, I did see the picture. I saw a lot of people having a whinge. Now, why would people be having a whinge? I'm assuming it's fish safety.
Yeah, questioning the safety, you know, if one or more of those carp starts to flip. But what is not out of shot is how many other people are there. Obviously, Alfie and the cameraman, which... Not sure, but I believe on this occasion was Ollie Davis, you know, a very capable carp angler himself. And I'm sure those fish were safe. Those two anglers do put fish safety quite high.
Yeah, Ollie wouldn't have took the picture or put it out if he didn't think it was safe. Yeah. But the bigger issue, I guess,
exactly.
Is...
Exactly, it's the example it sets for me.
Yeah, it was encouraging other people to recreate that shot. You know, maybe not as experienced, or maybe haven't got as many people on hand to help if the fish do start flapping. It's probably not a good idea, is it? Let's be honest.
No, I'm sure those fish with Alfie were safe, but... It's not a shot I like seeing. I don't like...
But what it does do is give the internet keyboard warriors some material to get stuck into and start laying into people. I just believe there's some people on the internet, you know, lots of people that just have got nothing better to do than to find things to pick holes in. Now, I agree that it's probably... Those pictures look great. I mean, those pictures come from like the 80s and that, when people were laying them on the grass. Well, even earlier than that, you're Chris Yates and Dick Walker type era.
Remember the old Billingsgate shots from the early Savvy days?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're iconic shots. And I'm guessing that's what, obviously, Ollie and stuff tried to recreate. They've obviously, you know, caught a number of fish in a very short time, had a red letter day and went for one of those shots. But like I say, it doesn't... It's the example it sets for other people, so I can see, I can see it being questioned. I mean, but to lay into somebody, you know, to internet bully somebody over it. I mean, you can make your point without getting personal. I know Ollie personally, and Alfie's a very keen young angler, and I trust that those fish are in no danger. But it sets a bad example. It shouldn't be in the magazines, I wouldn't have thought.
No, I'm 100% with you on that one. Now,
we've got a guest. You've been interviewing this week, haven't you?
Yeah, I had a good hour's chat with Jerry Hammond about all things carp and a few things uncarp.
Cool. Well, we'll get Jerry on shortly, but we've got some listeners' questions as well.
We have. We've got a few short ones we can get through. So let's start. Jack Sales.
Ask us a question.
He's interested and would like to hear discussed the height of chods. high-low, or curved and straight? What is the hooking potential of setting the chubs up these different ways?
Probably asking the wrong person, because I think they're my least favourite rig of all rigs. Again, we're speaking about... they're very situational. If you've got a peg where the fish are and it's thick with Canadian, you know, maybe it's a few feet below the surface or whatever, then yeah, chod's away forward. I personally don't like them really short. I think the longer they are and the more curved they are, the more effective there's going to be, because you're giving the hook bait some play for the fish sucking from different angles. Probably king of the chods was Jim Shelley, probably the most successful chod angler there is, and I've seen his rigs many times. I mean, you can see him yourself on all his YouTube videos.
I do this, right, yeah.
And he uses them quite long and quite curved, so, I mean, that's probably all you need to know.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. I mean, the short is just lack of movement, and having watched a carp... in, you know, close quarters in gin-clear water, suck an 18mm bottom bait, you know, from about 10 inch away.
Yeah.
You know, a shot, you just, unless the carp literally goes right down on it, and, you know, doesn't suck, you're limiting your chances. So, tall and curved.
Yeah.
That would be my choice. Well, a multi-rig would be my first choice, but if someone had a gun at my head, said, use a chod.
Yeah. I think most situations, apart from, like, you know, surface, but I think a solid bag will do just as good a job, you know, everything in the bag. And I also think I remember reading an article by Kev Hewitt after Christchurch. Did Kev Hewitt fish Christchurch? Sorry, not Christchurch, the other one, the big one.
Stoneacres,
yeah. Kev Hewitt fished Stoneacres, didn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, I remember seeing an article by him saying, because obviously you used to have to cast long range on there. You weren't allowed to drop from boats previously, but you could go out in the boat and check your rig and bait up and stuff. So they'd find the spot, they'd cast out, and then they'd go back out and drop the bait on it and check it's all fine and everything. And I remember reading that he was saying that the chods quite often weren't presented right. The line was going right across gaps in the weed and just really bad. And he said 99% of the time a hinge stiff rig with a long supple boom, like, performed way better in exactly the same scenario.
Well, when I spoke to Ed Betteridge back on, I think it was episode 9, he said exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I would much prefer a hinge stiff rig. If you put some foam around the hook to protect the hook and you bang a hinge stiff rig out with a light lead into weed, it's going to be looking a lot better than the chod is most of the time. So I would much rather use that rig wherever possible. But solid bags in the middle of weed work fine as well.
So. Do you know, the last time I used a choddy?
Yeah.
It was back on the Scout. You know, margins with weed growing over them and fish patrolling around the edge.
Yeah.
I use a chod with just the lead core and no lead at all.
Yeah.
So the lead core laid on top of the Canadian.
And you catch him,
only having... No, the cows walked through my rods that night and screwed it up. I'm sure I would have done if, right place, right time. It's somehow certainly having the armoury to do again when I'm facing that same situation, but, you know, a weed close in.
Yeah.
But if you put a lead on, it's just going to, you know, drag it, you know, 3-4 foot down to the bottom of the Canadian.
Yeah.
It was, something worth bearing in mind, because you'd be surprised how far you can flick, you know, just, you know, 3 foot of lead core.
Yeah, yeah, definite. Hope that answers your question, Jack. Have we got any more?
Yeah, we've got a couple more. Andy Goff, wants to know about bite alarms. This was a bit of advice he's been saving for a while, and he's been looking at several different types.
Ask us a question.
Fox NTXRs, so obviously money is not an issue. They are top of the range. The ECU Mark 1, Delkin TXIs, or Neville's. Any advice, welcome.
Well, your R3s should be in that list for a start, the Nash R3s. Certainly, I don't know why he hasn't put them in, but I'd take those over Delkins any day of the week. Delkins are my least favourite alarm. There are issues with them in the rain. I don't like the battery saving thing that they do. It means the receiver kicks in like 5 minutes after you've had a take, if it's been sat all night, you know, if you've not had a beep all night. But it's not unusual to not have a beep. It's unusual to not have a beep all night because they beep for everything. They're not very good in wind. There's so many things I don't like about the way Delkims work. They've just branded themselves extremely well, and everybody seems to think they're the best alarm on the market, and they wouldn't be in my top five. Sorry, Mr. Delkim. I used the Delkim conversions of the Optonics for many. That, you know, they were the best alarm years ago before obviously they got nicked and couldn't use the roller sensing, and they developed a new method which worked similar to how a record player works, but we all know if you bang a record player it makes horrible noise. And if the wind blows on Delkim's cost me fish. I got suckered in. I bought a set of TXIs with the remotes many years ago. I used them two sessions and got rid of them. I got more than I paid for him, which was the best bit of this scenario. But
out of the list for me, those would be the NTXRs.
NTXRs are a fantastic alarm. If you want to spend whatever they are, 160 quid each, or they are the top of the range. They are brilliant. I do have a set, and I cannot fault them in any way whatsoever. So if money's no object, I would be looking at them or the R3. The R3 are significantly cheaper. And they do everything an alarm needs to do. The R3s are great. I've been using them this year. I spoke about the... I love the speed sensing thing on them. So you put the... That's the best feature on the R3s, is the fact that you can turn sensitivity right down, and if there's the slightest sudden movement on the alarm, it will beep. But, you know, gentle movements, or, you know, waves lapping your rod tips or weeding the end of your line, it's not going to beep. But as soon as something different happens, because it works on speed as opposed to distance. But they're great. The receiver works miles away. I like the tones on them. I like the fact that the actual one toner is like the original Optonic one toner, and it puts the fear of God in you when it's screaming. And I like the functionality on them. I like everything about the R3. So if you're just looking at something in the Delkim price range, you know, that kind of 99 quid an alarm type price bracket, you know, sub £100, the R3s is the winner.
Do you know anything about these ECU Mark 1s?
I don't know about them. I can't. They're not the what's it ones, are they? The really cheap ones that you can use your phone as a phone app for the receiver.
I don't know. I've got to be honest, I can't really say much about those because I don't know much about them. And Neville's as well, they've been around forever, and I've never used them, but I do like the simplicity of a Neville.
The Nevilles, you cannot fault the Nevilles. They're an extremely robust, reliable roller buzzer alarm.
And Terry Hearn uses them.
And Terry Hearn made them extremely popular. I cannot fault the Nevilles. I'm not sure how good the range on them is. I mean, then one of the disadvantages of the Nevilles is that they never used to have a receiver. They were heads only, but they do a remote version now. They're an extremely basic but robust alarm, but I think they're more of a fashion than functionality.
Possibly. So the winner out of your list is, I'd say, NTXRs, with an honourable mention to the R3s.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It depends on price. If you want to spend 600 quid and three alarms, then get the NTXRs. If you can get probably four alarms and a night out down the pub for that with the R3s.
That's three nights out down the pub for a lightweight like me. So, yeah. I've got to be honest, I do keep looking at the R3s and being tempted, but... I don't know
why you haven't got a set, to be honest. You know, you've got connections with Nash. You can get yourself a set cheap.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm a bit wary of them. I had the RS1s and they let me down.
So. Yeah, the RS1s were great. They worked in the winter. You needed to keep the roller wheel. You needed to keep it WD-40, basically. There was, I think, they learned a lot of... They learnt a lot of mistakes from the R1. you know, as things do, they tend to improve. The R3s are perfect. I mean, they've come out a good, what, 4 or 5 years after release, the R1s, maybe longer. And everything's perfect on them. I mean, the RS1s, I mean, the wheels used to rust. Basically, there was a type of stainless steel they used on the wheel that rusted inside, obviously in the damp, and it stopped the wheel moving freely.
The roller. The wheel rusted. They had a very bad line skip. I had a double take one night on the A1 pit, so I'm stood next to the other rod as it's screaming off, and the reel's making more noise than the alarm. And
yeah,
they'd have a couple of electrical faults, but like I said, you know, they were, you know, the first attempt at a high-end alarm, and they've corrected a lot of mistakes. But I do still think I'll let the R3 stand the test of time, and then maybe in the future dive in.
Well, I'm telling you that they are great. But yeah, anyway, and the ECU, I'm sure they're those NGT ones, aren't they, that ECU one?
No, I don't, I'm not sure, is it? I've seen some like kind of square shaped alarm around online, like, but not taking a great deal of notice, to be honest. ECU is Edwards Custom Upgrades.
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about them.
No, they are the square ones I mentioned I'd seen and not took a lot of notice of, and but yeah, other than they've got the website I'm looking at here, I don't know anything about them. I can't
comment on something we haven't used, but yeah, I've got a picture of them. Now, they look like a cross between Neville's and the original Optonics with a Delkin GPL speaker on the front.
It's a bit of a hybrid, but yeah, it's Edwards Custom Upgrade, so...
Well, I can imagine their quality. I would have to see them used, but I mean, as I've always said with alarms, you want the alarm to tell you what the bobbin's doing. You know, you want to be able to picture the bobbin without looking at the bobbin.
Colin Meadows, he says, he's going on a social to a lake that's apparently really weedy at the beginning of April. My thoughts are to start with solid bags, maybe chods on the edges of clay spots. How would you guys approach a venue for the first time on a 48-hour session that's weedy and unknown to you?
Ask us a question.
Solid bags.
Firstly, I'd make sure it wasn't unknown. I'd be doing my homework.
Yeah, if you can find spots. I mean, I'd start off with a light lead, like a really light lead, like 1.5 ounce, 2 ounce, because if you get any sort of bump down with a light lead, then it's fishable. When I fish really weedy lead lakes in the past, a good method is to use a 1 ounce lead and... just have a lead around. It doesn't disturb the water too much, so if you're on a short 48 hour session, you can lead it around, and if you get any sort of thud or bump with that lead, then it's fishable, because you know, a light lead is not gonna, sometimes on weedy waters, if you're leading around with a 4 ounce lead, the lead drops through and hits, you know, the hard bottom underneath. You still get a bump, but it's still like very weedy. When you pull back, it's solid. But if you're led around with like a 1 ounce lead and you get any sort of bump, it won't drop through heavy weed. So if it hits the bottom, then it's fishable. And you can I would use my normal kind of blowback rig. If I get a bump with a 1 ounce lead, I'm happy using a normal rig with a stick threaded on, you know, a PVA stick threaded onto like a snowman or something. I'm happy fishing that if I get a bump with a 1 ounce lead. And then obviously anything, you know, that protects your rig even more, such as a solid bag, is definitely fine. But I'd probably go that way. I'd probably use a 1 ounce lead around, not disturbing the water too much. And anywhere it hits bottom, I'd fish you just protect your hook, either pop-up rig with some foam on it or... but I would try and find a spot first, is what I'm saying, as opposed to just... you know, blindly whack bags out, because if you do find a bump down anywhere, there's probably less weed in that spot for a reason, i.e. the fish have been feeding on it. Chods is a plan B. That, I would have a rod made up with chods if I had a lead around, really couldn't find anything. I would either be finding a different peg or probably putting chods and solid bags out.
I can't really add much more to what you were saying. Light lead, you know, bounce around, see if you can find anything, and then you know, a bag on it or a little bit bait on it. But again, if you see, you know, see fish show, or you see bubbling in an area, or you know, you see a duck dive down and then hit the surface a second later absolutely crapping itself and flying off, yeah, if you've got the choddy, sling a choddy.
Yeah, for sure. Cool, let's move on.
Ask us a question.
Yeah, Andy Clark. I like this question because I've come across the exact same problem. I'm fishing a water with a spod ban. I plan on fishing a method feeder all day to get some bait in and fish over it with a normal rig for the night. I've read somewhere that Horlicks makes pellets sticky to mould around the method feeder. Anyone tried this?
I've not heard that.
Horlicks? No. You've not? It's an old favourite. Hold, you know, a lot of your matchmen method feeding. Using them with a little micro pellets, they do it, and Sonia baits to a sticky pellet in a little tub. It's in, you know, does exactly the same thing. But fishing the method, I'd fish the method all night and day, definitely. And
yeah,
if you're fishing a spot that's within you know, catapult range, you know, get a lot of bait out, because it was going back a good few years. It was after I'd caught the lady, and I was a bit lost, to be honest. So I'm just bouncing around, having socials with mates on day ticket lakes. And we fished Richmond Lakes at Lincoln, which the bailiff, I think George was his name, he was a tad eccentric, to be honest. And he'd banned spotting because he decided that fish were not getting caught much off of big beds of bait. So
that's a great reason to ban it, because it annoys me so much.
It made it easy for me, because after first half few hours down there, you could see people were just casting bags out or a few pouchfuls, and I'm thinking, my God, these fish want some food.
Yeah.
I had a bucket of pellets with me. I chopped a load of boilies up, you know, put them in there, and, you know, boiled a pan of lake water to scald it, made a great big load of slushy mess, you know, let it dry out, and perfect ground bait balls. And the features in the swim I was in, it was tailor-made for it. He had about 11, from memory, this is a long time back, I think it was about 11, 12 foot in front of me, choddy. It rose up to about 9 foot, and that was literally 30 yards out. It was like a kind of like, not gravelly, but hard, silty bottom. Yeah. And then it started getting weedy towards the margin. So that seam, I just left the marker float out there. Thought, well, I'll just three rods on little sticks, and I'll chuck a load of these. Well, the original intention was to chuck just two on each rod, half a dozen method balls in. Only there's a couple of lads over the other side. As I chucked the first method ball in, went with a badoosh. They kind of like looked up to see what the commotion was. I chucked the next one in. They saw that I was doing. And one of them is waving his arms up like he's trying to tell me to stop. So I grabbed the next ball and I threw it as high as I could, so it made an even bigger splash. And I got a bit carried away, and I was going to put half a dozen balls in. I put every single one I had in, about 20 odd.
Yeah, you can get quite a lot of bait in with those method balls. I mean, that's what I've... It depends why they've banned spods. I mean, have they banned spods because they don't want people disturbing other people's fishing with... I mean, I don't... First of all, I don't get why you would ever have a spod ban.
Now, that's... I actually asked the bailiff, George, and that's what he told me.
Yeah, I mean, if there's... I don't know why Andy's water. I mean, quite often if they ban spots, it's generally a pre-baiting ban, i.e. you're not allowed to... I've come across lakes with that, where you're not allowed to put any bait in other than what you cast out. It usually just says no pre-baiting. But if it's just specifically spots that are banned, are spoms banned? I mean, you know, is it...
That's
is it
thing.
just is it just, you know, can you bend the rules a little bit? But I mean... Have you seen the method ball chuckers that you can get? I mean, we used to make them years ago on wire, so yeah. I went through a little craze of feeding method balls. Like, so basically you can roll these balls pretty big, like bigger than a tennis ball. The trick was we used to make them, just get them quite wet, make these balls, and then we'd lay them out on our unhooking mat, let them dry for about 20 minutes. You could... And you could get them to the perfect consistency where you could launch them 100 plus yards. I mean, because there's no resistance, because there's no line or anything. We used to make these basically, you know, like a catapult. You know, you can buy like the catapult ends. What would you call them? The
pouch.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Well, there's a pouch that's got like a plastic cup in it. I think Nash actually sell them actually as purpose made, but we used to make our own. So we used to buy the pouch that's got the plastic ball chucking thing in it, and then we
I'll tell you exactly what it was. It was a Trev Tomlin Whopper Dropper
pouch.
That's
right, yeah. That was the one. And then we used to tie a swivel and used to use that stiff link, the Amnesia black stiff link, so it didn't tangle. And we'd make it ourselves. You tie it onto the end of your spod rod. But the beauty of it is you're not casting anything into the water. So you cast it like you would cast a spod. The ball goes flying out and the pouch lands in front of you, like literally half a rod length out in front of you in the water. So there's no reeling in, and then balls fly because there's no resistance. So you can put them 150 yards if you get the consistency right on the balls. And the beauty with making those method balls is you can have boily inside them, you can have hemp in there, tiger nuts, whatever you want. You can make a mix, it compacts really nice, dry them out a bit and you unhook them out and use it. I think Nash called them method blasters, that's right, I've just remembered. But yeah, you can buy them or you can make your own. I would use that. You can get a hell of a lot of bait out. You can put 20 kilo bait out with those. That's probably your best way. And again, you're not spotting. The pouch lands. It sometimes doesn't even make it to the water. In fact, if you get a bailiff that's like considers it spotting, like you can just stand like two rod lengths behind the water, and you will not be putting anything in the water. The pouch will be landing on the floor in front of you.
Yeah, nothing like any method. If you're one of the first on it, you're going to reap the rewards.
Yeah, the first thing I'm thinking is, you know, if you're fishing further than catapult range and you're the only person that can get a significant amount of bait out there, you're going to catch well. You know, it's an edge. But people are going to get onto what you're doing with the method balls pretty soon. But yeah, method blaster, Nash sell them, or you can make your own. Go and buy a pouch and make your own. What we got next? Let's get Jerry in.
You're right, mate.
Yeah, I'm fine, mate. You hear me okay, your end?
Yeah, mate, I'm alright. I'm just sitting in my chair in front of my rods. Best place to be.
Oh, wow, that sounds ideal. Well, I've started the recording straight away, so...
Okay, yeah, no problems, mate.
I'll just get straight to it. You're fishing right now, so is it a lake you can tell us about? A name, or...?
Of course it... Yeah, of course it is, mate. It's my lake, Carthagena Fisheries. We've got two lakes here, and this is the main lake, like the one that's been syndicate for the last 14 years since I lived here. And then we've got another lake over the back, which used to be day ticket water, but that's now a syndicate as well. And I think that's been about about 5 years, that one. So, yep, I'm nice and close to home. It don't take me long to pack up and walk home, to be honest. It's the best trip home I've ever had. I literally live on site, mate. I'm literally, like, 2 minutes away, which is good.
Yeah, it's not even 2 minutes from some of the swims, man. I've seen your place once, one of the old Nash Road shows years back.
That's right, years back. I remember everyone come down, didn't they? Johnny Mack and Mickey Gray. They was all down, mate. It was a really good social, as it goes. I think we had about 300 people turn up that day. Yeah. It went really well, really well. I was well pleased with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been here 14 years now, Mark. 14 years.
Wow. So how did you get that place? Because it's not just your lakes. You've got this grand design house like in between the on the River Lee, is it?
Yeah. I actually live on an island on the River Lee. It's like a lock house, an old lock keeper's house, which I don't have to run it or work it, which is great. and we live literally on an island. We sort of park our cars one side, walk over the metal railing lock bridge, and then you've got my house. And then, which is like totally on an island of its own. And then you go across, we've got a weir pool right next to my kitchen window with like a wooden bridge going across. And then you go across there. And the first thing when you go through like a little gate, first thing you see is my clubhouse, which is like an old cricket pavilion. It's been there for about 50 years now. And then there's two lakes. I mean, when we first came here, it's all in the Lee Valley Park. And when we first came here, The lake, the main syndicate lake, was the only lake sort of fit functional, really. The other lake was totally overgrown. It's quite a famous old lake for people in the area. It used to be called Heartbreak Lake for the simple reason it was just really, really hard to catch anything out of. I think there was a few old tench. I've seen some newspaper cuttings from the 70s of some nice tench from there. But apart from that, it was really hard to access any of the swims. And they was all overgrown, and we just basically worked at it for years and got it all knocked into shape. And now it's a lovely water. It's probably one of the oldest lakes in Hertfordshire, I've been told, about 90 years old. And it's gin clear, full of pads, gravel bars all over the place. It's just like a carp angler's dream, that one. Really proud of it. It's come on really well, mate.
Wow, that,
really well.
That sounds great. Well, I'm actually sat in my little studio, which is my spare room, surrounded by the wife's Mickey Mouse toys. It doesn't quite. I know where I'd rather be.
Well, it's so nice here because, like, but look, when I'm sort of, obviously I've fished it on and off over the years. I fished both the lakes, you know, and I've never wanted to fish it too intense because of the fact I don't want to catch them all, but they're really old fish, especially in the main lake. They're anywhere up to 40 years plus old, some of the old originals. And I thought to myself, if I can't keep catching these fish in time, I'm not going to have none to go for, like of the old original stock. There's obviously young fish coming through. And but then you've got the other problem is if you don't catch them now, they won't be around forever. So I've been, whenever I'm in between sessions on target waters, I always drop on there. I love it. I mean, I've never, in all the years I've lived here, I've never got bored with putting a rod out on here. Hence, I'm here now, like, you know, in between sessions on other waters. So, yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah. And the fish are just there to die for, mate. They are absolutely stunners in here. They're really old. I know you'd love them for sure, mate. Definitely.
Oh, without a doubt. I think we've got the same taste in carp, and we'll. I know that. Yeah. We've got several waters in common over the years.
Of course, mate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So, I remember seeing you was over on, what was the one with that starburst?
Willington.
Is it Willington, that's it. I really liked it over there, and I see that fish a few times, and it got me sort of got me going a bit, and then sadly the otters took it away and killed it, so that was the end of that for me. But it was a lovely place, and you caught that one, didn't you, mate?
Yeah, I had, minus bream and tench, I had one bite from a carp in there, and fortunately it was...
It was that one. Isn't it nice, mate, when that happens, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have told...
Not enough.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've told the story on a podcast before when I caught that one, but, you know, yeah. I'd driven down after a night shift, you know, cast two rods out, because, well, it was two rods only, wasn't it?
And, yeah.
Well, two rods when you were likely to get caught.
Yeah.
Because, let's be honest, everyone were chucking three and four out at night.
I think they do, don't they?
Yeah. And, you know, I woke up about 10:30 by all the mighty splash. And I was like, oh, what's
where, that? Whereabouts was you on the lake? What swim? What area?
It was one on the road.
As you come in?
Yeah, it's one of Yeah, as you come in, you've driven down to the left. It's in, like, the open water. You've gone past the island.
Okay, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, along there.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the larger swims, and there was, like, a big gravelly spot casting towards a pylon.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly. And this splash, it woke me up. You know, it wasn't a fish boshing. It was a blooming nice, considerate tench angler in the next swim, chucking a rake in.
Lovely. Great.
So I went for a walk, found a couple of fish, your little cricket-back commons.
There's a few of them, weren't there?
Yeah, in, you know, that set of pads just over the stile, up the other end.
Yep, I know, yeah.
You know, dropped a little bag on the left and a little choddy on the right in literally an 18-inch of water. And
blimey.
I've seen some bow waves right on the far side of that bay, so while I've walked round to drop a few pellets in the edge, it's tore off and...
Christ, bingo. It's lovely, isn't it, when it happens, when it's like that. It's just sort of like, well, that'll do. And what a good time. I think you caught it was it the spring before I went over there? Yeah, you did. And I went over there in the summer. It was quieter then because obviously the fish had spawned and I just wanted to get to know the place a bit and try and track the fish down and find it, which I did on quite a few occasions after a while. And then next thing I know, like, the otters had it and the big common that was in there, the warrior, was it called?
I mean, there was...
Yeah, what a shame.
I only ever saw one, but there was rumours of two big commons around the upper 30, low 40 mark. But,
blimey.
Yeah, it was a shame with the otters.
It's sad, isn't it? It is sad, but it's sad, the way of the world at the moment, isn't it, I'm afraid?
Yeah. I mean, with the way that lake is, there was, you know, the river ooze, you know, great ooze, literally a stone's throw from it, and over a cow field which could never be fenced. Yeah. I feel sorry for that club, because that one fish must have cost them a lot of money.
It ruined them, didn't it? It did ruin them. I mean, once them fish were gone out of there, I think that was, unless they're, you know, they're going to restock it, are they going to be throwing their money down the drain, or... I think it was one of their better waters, you know, and it attracted a few customers, obviously, a few anglers due to the fish. And with them gone, I think that was kind of ruined it, like, you know, totally. Such a shame. It is such a shame. I mean, I'm dreading it in the valley. I mean, there's, I think there's otters in the valley. You know, I could never fence this off, never. It's too, there's, I've got river running up around one bank, main river and a Whirlpool running past my house, past the other bank. And then the other lake's got a river running all the way around it. You just couldn't do it. My only hope is that there's hundreds of lakes around this area, and if they chose me, I'd be really unlucky. So I'm sort of looking on the fact that I'll be, you know, just totally unlucky if they decide to pick on me, sort of thing, like, and hope it stays like that. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, have they not been seen in the Lee yet, or?
I've not heard of any, but I'm sure they're around somewhere. Yeah, I mean, they're getting around these days, so yeah, probably won't be long. Yeah. I think they are. I think they've been released in the Lee. I don't know whether they're still around, but I'm sure they're about. I don't want to see them, that's for sure. Yeah. It just ruins you, ruin your life, ruin everything. Like, you know, to me, these fish are like my babies, you know. And if they was to get chewed up by an otter, I think that, I don't know, I'd probably just sell up and move abroad or something, give it all up. I think that'd be the end of it. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy it. You know, it is great.
Yeah,
it is great. I mean, it's been a good day today, actually. This is a tough water by normal standards. I mean, obviously, I've fished a lot of lakes throughout my angling time, and it is a very tricky water. It's only about 7 acres, 7 or 8 acres, and they're just clued up, these fish. They really are clued up. And all right, in the spring, it has its moments, like most waters do. So from there onwards, there's the best time to be on here, like any water. But once they've settled down and they're awake and they've got a bit wiser, they're hard to catch. And last night, I mean, all winter, I caught a 32 common out of here I don't know if it was January or the end of December. And I think since then, I don't think there's been a bite. And then it's just woke up over the last couple of days. And it's done, one lad had a 30 common yesterday, and he had a scraper 20 or just under 20 common. One of my mates next door, one of my bailiffs, he caught a 25, a stunning fish. And then yesterday I caught a 33. And then this morning, my mate next door had a flipping stunner, 43 common. Absolute, nice. Yeah, I mean, to see it on the bank and words, you know, you get them fish and you just think, like, words and pictures don't, although the pictures are very good, but you just don't do it no justice. It was just absolutely an awesome carp. And it was a bit light. It came out at 45, nearly 46 before, but it's the sort of fish that goes missing for a long time. And then it comes out a couple of times on the trot, and that's what it's done. That actually came out December or early January. That was one of the last fish as well. And it's had like a couple of months rest, 2 or 3 months probably laying up somewhere. It's just started to feed again, and it's got nailed. But it's the sort of fish, I caught it, and it never come out for 2 years after that. So it's the sort of carp that stay out of the way, and the longer it does, the bigger it'll get. And it's stunning, mate, absolutely stunning. Yeah. Hopefully it'll keep going.
Oh, I'm sure it will, and I've known a few fish like that, they just disappear. Even lakes, well, such as yourselves there, it's, you know, not a monstrous lake, you know, it's just constant rod hours, and, you know, we've still seen it while it's uncaught, or is it just...
Yeah, yeah, it's this lake is ridiculous. It seems like certain fish have their moments when they come out a few times, and then they just sort of disappear. They disappear from the bank, but you see them swimming. Yeah. I mean, we've got a couple of fish at the minute that are missing, but obscene. We actually done a bit of filming on here, when was it? Last year, just at the time they were going to spawn on here. We needed to get some footage of them spawning. Yeah. And we went out on the boat, and the guy had like a pole cam, under the water, and he filmed this fish. And what he'd done, he froze a picture of it and sent it to me and showed me. I went, blimey. I said, that's a fish called June. It's been missing for like 2 years. And all the anglers think, well, it can't be in here no more. No one's seen it, because this one doesn't. You don't see it much unless you're looking at it in snags or something like that. And I haven't seen it. And then there she was in all her glory, looking about 41, 42 pound. Like, kept well out of the way for the last 2 years. And that's on a lot of people's wish lists, along with another fish called the Unknown. That's been missing for 2 years as well, and that's got to be over 40 now. It came out 2 years ago at nearly 37 or 36, well spawned out, and ain't been caught since then. So they do get away with it in here. There is a tree line with some snags along it where they can get. It's very shallow. You know, it's only a couple of foot deep, but you know they can get in there. But they're just quite clever. And perhaps some of them are getting hooked and getting lost, but they do get away with it, mate, which makes it all the more interesting to the anglers fishing here, I think. They love it. A bit frustrating for them, but they love it.
Yeah, that's part of it. You know, when it does come out, somebody is going to be absolutely over the moon. You know,
this lad here, it's his first UK 40, and he's blown away, mate. And what a fish to catch for it to be. It's absolutely pin perfect. There ain't a blemish on it, and it's the perfect looking common, like absolutely lovely little round tail, and it's just immense. It's such a lovely, lovely fish. I wish I could show you a picture of it. It's so, so nice. I'll have to send you one. It is beautiful, mate.
Yeah,
really
definitely.
Nice.
Definitely. I can look at pictures of stunning carp all day long.
Oh, yeah.
My wife thinks I'm a geek, and, well, let's be honest, she's absolutely spot on.
Yeah, of course she is. I mean, aren't we, really? I mean, at the end of the day, people on the outside looking in think, my God, what are they talking about? You know, why are they so obsessed with these fish, you know? But I said to my mate today, like the guy that caught this 40, I said, it's flipping crazy, really, isn't it? You know, I've probably spent most of my life chasing flipping carp. And he's only in his, like, mid-20s, like, I think he's about 26, and he's like... Yeah. Yeah, he said, I'm the same. And I said, yeah, but I've done it a lot longer. And I say, and I'm still doing it, and I'm still keen. I've just seen a fish roll not far from me. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, so it's funny. I said to him, like, you spend all your life chasing these carp, and they are only carp at the end of the day, aren't they? They're just creatures that we spend all our lives chasing around the lake. It's ridiculous, but great. Don't quite understand it, but I know I love it.
No, it's well, I think your DVD you did a few years about the compulsive angler. That word compulsive sums us up.
Mm. Yeah. And, oh, Christ. Yeah. I've never, in all the years that I've sort of been fishing, I mean, I left school and joined the army, but prior to going in the army, I was fishing over Hainault Forest, where Dempsey and all them boys were back then, and I was well into it, and I remember I just got my first cart rods, like, mate. My dad's friend taught me how to whip the eyes on the old Fuji eyes, and I went to Romford Angling and sent them away and got some leather tennis racket whipping handles done on them with the Fuji reel grass. I think that was Jerry Savage blanks, and I had Mitchell 810s, and I was the man. I had everything, and then my enlistment came up for the army, so I went away and done my bit of time in the army. But whilst I was in the army, whenever I came home, we used to, it's frowned upon now, but we used to go and poach everywhere when we were younger. No one give a damn, like, you know, you just climb over a fence and go fishing, and no one ever used to say a thing, like, you know. It wasn't so sort of, you know, the clubs and syndicates weren't as sort of like they are today. There was just, you know, no one was really into it as much as we were, like, you know, just sort of go where we want. It was brilliant. And I used to come home, then obviously when I left the army, I came back home and started fishing over Hainault again at the time when that big one in there was like 36 plus, which is a very big carp for that time in the 80s. And that's when I met Terry Dempsey and all them boys over there. And I must say, from then till now, I've not took my foot off the gas ever. I've been as deeply in love with it as I am now as I was then, you know. And I hope it continues, mate.
Yeah, oh, sure it will. Was that fishing Hainault, the one you just mentioned, was that like the first time you targeted an individual?
Well, I wasn't targeting anything over there. It was I was just absolutely obsessed with trying to catch them and learnt. That's where you sort of, it's like your stomping ground. I mean, I started fishing over there as a kid, like float fishing and leisuring and swim feeding and all that. There was big carp in there then. I remember all the carp boys over there. And, you know, I was happy to catch a tenge or anything back then. But then once I got right seriously into the carp, to be honest, mate, just to catch a carp was a bonus. You know, you didn't really care about whether it's a 20 or a 30. I mean, 30s, but there was only three in there, two. There was two at the time, and then another one went 30 for a season and then dropped back down to 29. And so you only had the three, and we was happy to catch, like, 18, 20 panders. They were just... to us, they were the ones, they were monsters, like, you know. So yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much targeting it for me, it wasn't. I mean, I wanted to catch it, obviously. I found Hainault to be a really tricky water. I kind of struggled on there, but I learnt everything on there, if you know what I mean. It was a big learning place for me there, and it kind of set me up for me angling. It sort of lit that fire, if you know what I mean. And because I found it hard, I wouldn't give in, and I'm like, no, I'm going to suss this out. And still not sussed it out today, but you know what I mean? I keep on, that's what keeps you going, isn't it? Every lake's different. Every lake's got a certain method, a certain style of fishing or a certain way of fishing. And that's why I think we like it so much. Well, me personally, I enjoy the challenge. Not bothered about what other people are doing, so to speak. I just want to enjoy my fishing and set myself a challenge, a personal challenge, and try and see it through. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I'm the same you know, with the personal challenges, and that's why I've gone slightly off script a bit this year. I'm targeting a couple of day ticket biggies, which
I think you said about this yesterday.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of thing you normally get up to, is it?
No, I'm going to see how long I last. I'm either going to catch it or get so fed up I'll never swear never to go back.
Or you'd just be like me and get stubborn and just think, I'm staying with it.
Yeah,
even though I'm not liking it, you know?
I've got to be honest, I did have a ticket for a bit of a park lake a few years back. It's got an absolutely stunning old common in which, you know, hovers, you know, a few ounces either side of the 40. And I just, I retreated.
I
just dropped the ticket. And, you know, when you've got, you know, Polish skinny dipping like 10 yards away from you know, people, they come down on the horses and they're not taking the horse for a drink, they're taking the horse for a swim. And,
And
the quiet side of the lake has got a pub on it.
Oh, great. But, just what you need.
Yeah, but honestly, mate, I take my hat off to anyone who does stick it out and catch that fish, because it's an absolute stonking creature.
It's worth it. It's probably worth the effort, but it'd be aggro and, you know, maybe a bit of uncomfortable fishing for a while, that sort of fishing that you're not enjoying. But once you've got it, you can be, you know, chuffed to bits and move on, you know.
Yeah. I had a little bit of that on Willington, because, you know, it was a club water. Anyone could join.
Yeah.
I did meet a few Muppets on there, to be honest.
to put it frankly.
Yeah, but it was interesting.
Yeah. But, I liked it. I thought it was all right over there. I was really enjoying myself. Like, you know, there was no one there. I had it to myself, apart from a couple of people, and it was just great, you know. It was, you got all them bloody animals, didn't you, on that big open bank. I think I woke up one night, a load of noise. It was about
cows.
30 cows, yeah.
I hate
all
cows.
All around me. They was all sat around me bivvy, leaning against the sides of it and snorting and fucking, you know, all sorts. Like, I was like, what is this? I went out there, it kind of freaked me out a bit because I didn't know what, you know, I didn't expect it, you know what I mean? They just sort of just turned up.
Yeah, cows are bigger than me. I'm not happy with them at all.
And they wouldn't budge.
They're just, they're horrible creatures. But I've got to ask, with the weather we've had today, there was a bit of a frost this morning.
Yeah.
A sunny day. That. Are you sat behind the zig rigs right now?
Well, what happened was last night was probably the most. They went mental on here last night. They went absolutely mental. The night before, I jigged out, and then come the morning, they weren't as active that night. But come the morning, I see a bit of bubbling here and there, so I changed over to a little bottom bait, a little choddy as it goes, and then just flicked a choddy to the bubblers, and then about 9 o'clock, I had to take off for that 33. So I thought, all right, like they're not up in the layers, they're dropping and feeding now, they're bubbling and that. But then last night, the fish activity was just crazy, and I had two rods out, and right where they were, and I could not get a bite, and they were flopping out, and all night long there was ripples coming back, and I had one real big fish crash out and wake me up, and I just thought, different approach tonight. I've got them both on zigs tonight. They were definitely up in the layers. They had to be. I mean, they were right over me a lot of the time, and over my friend next door. Although he didn't catch his fish till later in the day. Sort of, I think he was having a doze, and his rod went, and he had one tight against the reed line on the other bank. It's only a couple of feet deep, and the sun was out. So obviously, that big old common light had a little. Yeah, it's woke up, and it was just, you know, meandering about, I suppose. And he said it was a funny little bite. He said he had a few bleeps like a liner, his bobbin pulled up, and as he looked to his spot, he could see a load of bubbling coming up over his spot. Obviously, the fish was hooked, and he said then there was a great big vortex, and his rod went, and he went flipping out, like, you know. He said, but thankfully, it came in quite easily. Like, he said, it came in like a dog on a lead, where it hadn't really woke up properly, I suppose. Still a bit lethargic, but it was absolutely. I said to him, that's how you want them, mate, you know. I mean, it's mouth, all the fish in here, their mouths, there's only one carp in here that's got a funny, dodgy, it's not a dodgy mouth, but this common's mouth this morning was absolutely pristine. But we've got a linear in here, Goes back anywhere between 42 and 44. And it is absolutely stunning. It's a proper zip linear, quite a slate grey one. And yeah. One side of its mouth's got like a tear in it, like quite bad. And we call it the parrot lin, the parrot linear. And apparently, yeah. Someone put it in this lake when it was £12, like 20, 30 years ago, and it had that tear in its mouth then when it was put in here. So it's obviously happened to it in the river many years ago. And but it's a real desirable fish to catch. I mean, I caught it the other year and I was over the moon with it. It's a stunning carp. I know Nigel Sharp said he wants to come down and catch it. You know, we're getting a bit of interest over in there because the fish are stunning. They're old. And, you know, like more the old school type of anglers, they pinpoint these fish, don't they, all around. And they go, oh, that means more to me than anything else. I'd like to come and catch that, you know. And we're getting the sort of like, that's what's happening now. We're getting a bit of interest, like, which is good, you know. You know, you've got real good anglers on there, nice blokes that know their stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, anyone's welcome to come and catch them. But, like, it is getting a lot more interest off of some of the old boys, like some of the old school boys. It's quite good.
Yeah, and you know your fish are going to be looked after when they are caught.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a little clip of how, like, I put it on YouTube, like a little bit of filming of, especially on the other lake, of how I want the fish to be treated once it's landed and it's in the net. And basically, yeah. I've given them the link on their rules, and they're to write that, you know, click on the link, like write the link out and click on it on YouTube or whatever and watch it. And they have to watch that. And then, I don't care how they do it on any other lake, but that's how I want it done on this lake. And to be fair, they all abide by it. We don't have no sacking up on nothing. You know, we close the lake when they spawn on here. It's something I've done for a long time now. What we do is the first sign of spawning, as long as the big girls are having a go as well and they're all getting involved, I normally close the lake down no matter what time of the year it is, whether it's May, June or July or whatever. We shut for six weeks. And then the first weekend of them 6 weeks of closure, we have a work party and then we have a draw. So they can choose their swims. This happens on both lakes. I know they sometimes shut down at different times, but it happens on both lakes. And they're going the draw and they choose their swim accordingly to wherever they come out in the draw. So if you come out first, you get first choice sort of thing and so on. And they choose a swim and then they're allowed to go and prime that swim up throughout the close season. And that's good for me because I might have sort of 15 blokes around both lakes baiting it every week. And the fish have now done their spawning. They're left, you know, they need to rejuvenate and put their weight back, or, you know, and build up their strength again. And they need some nourishment. So the last thing they need is a nook in their mouth and being hauled up onto the bank after spawning. And all they're doing is swimming around as free as anything, eating everything that everyone's throwing at them. And it really recovers the fish really quick. And then my autumn weights are massive in here. Like they gain so much weight through it. And, you know, the fish are in excellent condition because of that, I'm sure. I mean, years ago, before we closed it down, we used to just shut certain swims down. But the fish used to swim out of them swims at night and in the morning and get hooked up the other side of the lake, like, you know. And certain fish back then, we had a stunning linear in here and it got caught three times on the trot. And then I found it dead the next day. And then another common came out, about 28, and I found that in the corner, floating, and the bloke said, oh, I was trying to recover it, and it just kept popping up on the surface. And I went, that's it. From now on, we close the lake. You know, I'm not having it. There's no point. What's the point in killing your fish? You know, that, you know, you want them forever, not for, like, a couple of seasons. You know what I mean?
No,
they're so precious.
Yeah, I think that's 6 weeks, and the fact that you're going cracking autumn weights and...
Yeah. I mean, when we have a start of a season on here then, and it's really exciting, especially if you're one of the guys that's done a draw and you've picked an half-decent swim. And to be fair, nearly every swim on here is a good swim when you've been baiting it for 6 weeks. And, you know, you can give it as little or as much as you like. And to me, the fish are just getting stress-free feeding for 6 weeks, right when they need it, rather than when they don't, you know, like without getting a nook in their mouth and dragged on the bank and photographed and all that when they're really sort of weak and trying to recuperate. And, yeah, it goes down well. And then at the start of the season comes, we have a big barbecue and we have a, you know, we let them cast that just on dark and it's exciting. Kind of gives you that old June the 16th spirit again, but when it should be, once the fish have done their spawning and had a rest.
Yeah, I was going to say the old June the 16th spirit, it's something that, well, a lot of young anglers, they'll never have known.
I know, yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I spent June the 16th last year in a weir pool in a little river near me, and it's less than a mile as the crow flies from Yorkshire Wildlife Park, and I've got, in one hand I've got a rod trotting down for big perch, big chub, and I can hear lions roaring in the
distance. So I think that's quite good. I mean, we've got a zoo near here, actually, Broxbourne Zoo, and you can hear the lions some mornings, on a quiet morning, you can hear them, like, you know. I say to the anglers, it's a lion, again, get out of it. I said, it is. it is, like, they don't believe you.
they're raw, especially in the dead of night. You know, the first time I heard it, we're moving here, I'm loading my car up early morning, and I heard it, I was like, I knew exactly what it was instantly, but it sounded a hell of a lot closer. I'm like, I'm hurrying up.
I'm not hanging about. You're packing up and going, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't want one of them chewing off my ankle.
No, mate, you do not, Brilliant.
Have you ever had, is any carp in the river around you?
There is, we've got the stalk, which is further up, and the lee, which joins, I think it joins a stalk further up, it does. And, there are carp here. They're quite sort of, they're probably trapped between various lock gates, and, you know, they can get through them when locks are open, but they'll have to spend a bit of time, I suppose, in the lock until they open the other gate, if you know what I mean. So they do tend to stay in them stretches. we have targeted them over the years further up river and caught them up to sort of scrape a 30 in there. And I've seen a bigger one up by near Dubs Weir. I've seen a good one up there. I'd say, I think it came out before at 36, 37. So it's a lovely old carp. We was doing a feature up there one day and we'd done a night and caught a couple of carp, nothing big. And then the next morning I stood there with a guy and I went, there she is, there's the big one. And we looked in, it swam past, like it was going to the spot I'd been baiting. We'd all packed up. It's a big old fish. Like, you know, when you see them swim past in a river like that, it's flipping amazing. But yeah, I mean, you don't get fished enough for the carp these days. There's so many crayfish in the rivers. And,
you
put a rod in the water and you're not fishing, are you, after sort of 10 minutes and the crays have been on it and you're getting bleeps and you just know you're getting done by them. And you're reeling in the morning. If you're staying all night, you've got no baits on. You have to get up every sort of half hour and recast them. But, you know, sometimes the carp move in and you get lucky. Like, we had some good times up there. But then another time you go and you just can't keep a rod in the water for 5 minutes. You know, it did spoil it. And the crayfish are just prolific up and down the lee. I mean, there's billions of them, billions the size of bleating lobsters. And they're gradually creeping into all the lakes. We don't seem to have the they got in Brook Lake, and we have had pots out for them, but we don't get many. I think, you know, I'm not there. There is a couple of baby, there was a couple of baby cats in there years ago. I never put them in there, but they were there. I mean, I even reported them to the EA, so they knew that they was in there, and they've been seen now to be bigger, and we've caught a few smaller ones as well. We're not in the cats at all, like, you know, but if they're eating the crays, then I'd rather catch a catfish and have my baits chewed off by crayfish. And I thought, if we can eradicate the crays with the cats and the pots, and then once the problem's resolved, we can then get rid of the cats, you know. But we've not really had much trouble with them on there now. Hopefully they're more or less got, well, I don't know if they're gone. And then the main lake here, I mean, I'm surrounded by rivers. The river behind me, which is 15 foot behind me, is full of them. This, and they can walk across land, can't they? But these, this lake here that I'm on, we've had reports of the odd bait getting nibbled and stuff like that, but we don't really get more trouble with them. I mean, maybe it's not suitable for them. I don't know. We don't seem to get many people moaning about it. I've never had a bait chewed in here, but occasionally they do. So they must be in here, but they're just not that sort of aggressive. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I've got to be honest, I've never never encountered that problem. I've never fished a lake with crays, and if I can help it, I never will.
Honestly, it is a nightmare. I was fishing another lake in the valley a few years back, and I'd seen some really good fish come down this bar to this little island, and I got up a tree, and they were all good fish. And I remember I'd done this rig with like a white sort of foam ball, and I put one of them plastic casings around it, you know, what they use for the crays. But it was so flipping buoyant, you could hardly sink the bleating thing. Anyway, I managed to cast it on the side of this bar, and I put a load of spots of giant hemp over it, and I was really, really confident, like, you know. And then the next morning, I'm sitting there and thinking them fish should be turning up soon, and I see them. I could see them coming down the bar, and I've got up the tree, and they're tailing up over the hem. They're going mental on it, like cladding all the bottom up and everything. And I'm thinking, Christ on that. Why ain't I had a bite? You know, I kept getting down from the tree, sitting behind my rod, and nothing happened. But all I do remember was in the night, I had a reasonably slack, not slack. I couldn't have it tight, as I didn't want to pull it off the side of the bar. Yeah. I had it sort of just a semi-slack line going to the lead. And I do remember having a couple of bleeps in the night, as if the lead had moved towards me a bit. And I didn't think nothing of it. When I reeled in, my rig was at the bottom of the bar in the weed. The craze had dragged it off of the bar and dragged it into the weed. So when the carp turned up and that, there was nothing. My rig wasn't there. So frustrating. Like, it's just wasting your time. You know, you would have definitely caught. And there were some good ones there. Bit of a shame, really. It was an opportunity there. You know, after that, they was all gone and they never come back. So I was gutted. But there you go.
They are. Do you know a fella called Martin Wassell? I think he was might have been on the lagoon at the same time as you.
What's his name?
Martin Wassell, from up Derby way.
Oh, how long ago? What? Because
I know he was on the lagoon for about 3 or 4 years up to the Ledain.
Martin. I probably didn't know him. I probably had a nickname for him or something.
I know we used to call him Split Shot over in Elstow years ago.
Martin. I must know him. The fishing over on Naseby Meads was absolutely. You're on about Naseby Meads, are you?
St Ives Lagoon.
Oh, sorry, mate. Yeah. Sorry, I thought he was on about Naseby Meads Lagoon, because we called them the lagoons over the road us. Martin. I know of the name. I think he'd been and gone, I'm sure, by the time I'd got there. Well, I heard about him, yeah.
Yeah, well, after the lady passed, he joined another lake, a club lake, not far away from there.
Yeah.
I remember him sending me pictures of these Turkish long-clawed crayfish that were in there, and they were about a foot long. And he's he's dropped different baits in the edge just to try and find something that maybe they didn't like, and he says they were violent. They used to just fight each other for the bait. And you know, and it's crazy, he says it tasted delicious, too. He used to live off them.
I could never eat them. I could never eat them. I've had potfuls of them before, and they're just like scavengers on the bed of the river, and they just eat all the crap. And I just thought, I ain't eating them things. I can't be bothered with them. Oh God, yeah. Can you imagine that? Disgusting creatures. I absolutely hate the sight of them. I can't stand them. It ruined we got the Whirlpool outside my house, and it was. When we first moved in there, there weren't really no trouble with craze, and they gradually sort of swarmed in there and overtook that. And then your tickets start dropping, your membership starts dropping, and you go, the river outside my house, I was talking to a guy yesterday, and he said, you know, back in the day, he said on June the 16th, the whole mile of this river was crammed with anglers, like for the first day of the season. Yeah. You're lucky to get one, two. I used to control about, to begin with, I had 2 miles, I had about 3 or 4 miles of it, and it was just a waste of manpower running up and down the river all the time for nothing, and there was no one on there no more, no one fishing it. You know, it used to be quite busy years ago, and it was all catching chub and bits and bits. I mean, you get herds of cormorants swimming up and down there, and then tons of crayfish, and people just go, you know what, I'd rather just go to a little, little pond somewhere, a match play, or somewhere where they can go and catch them, you know, without the problems. You know, it's just the way it's changed. It's a shame, really. It is a shame, but that's what's it's like predation. It's just going on, isn't it, with everything. You can't do nothing much about it. They're here now. You've got to live with it.
Nothing legal anyway. We're hands are tied in a lot of things, which is so I think we should all add what weight we've got behind the PAG and hope they can do something.
Definitely. Oh yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard whatever they do. They keep saying they've got ways of getting rid of the craze, or you hear that they've got different things they can do, but they can't do it because it'll upset something else in the river. And I don't know. I'm not taking the notes of it now, because they don't do nothing. So, you know, it's a shame, because, like, you know, the rivers are empty. My part of the river is anyway. There's never anyone really on it. There hasn't been for years. The Whirlpool's all right. The Whirlpool's busy because we've been getting some cracking perch. I mean, one of my mates had a brace of fours, not this the end of this season, last season, and his mate sat with him, had a 7.5 chub. So, that's a good session. A brace of 4 pound perch and a 7.5 pound chub between them in the day. I think they had a few smaller perch, you know, like 2.5, 3 pound to back them up. And, it's really fishing well. And then there was a fiver as well, a £5 perch. So they're getting bigger and bigger, and that's attracting a few anglers now once again. When we first came here, there were some good barbel up to about 15, 16, but I think they've gone. I did get a stocking once of barbel and some other species, but they were so small, the ones that were stocked, it was a waste of time, I suppose, like everything, you know, all the perch and the pike and the crayfish and everything all got involved, you know.
Man, I've been talking about braces of £4 perch and £7 chub. Wow, that is, that's amazing. I'm not sure which is best, a £50 carp or those three fish you've just mentioned, but I just absolutely love it. Well, anything that swims.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you have to come down and have a go. I mean, you know, you're more than welcome. Come down and fish the weir at the right time, and the perch are really good, really good. They was catching some good ones on the tip, on the worm, quite regularly. I think last year was better. This year, I don't know if it's because the sort of area that they were living in got fished quite a bit, and it maybe pushed them away. I don't think they've gone far. We've got, like, moorings along the side of the weir, and I think perhaps they'd sort of drifted underneath the moorings and weren't tempted enough to come out and get caught, like, you know. But hopefully they'll be back on form again next year and we get another load of big ones getting caught. But yeah, in there, and big pike up to 26, and, you know, some good fish in there. There is.
Yeah, sounds like a proper zoo, literally. Mm. We've drifted a little bit away from carp fishing.
Yeah, so, go on, mate, let's get on what we're supposed to be talking about.
I'm going to drift even further away, because I remember going back a good few years.
Yeah.
There was an article, like an interview with you in the old Carp Addict magazine.
All right.
And there's all these pictures of you with, like, Tom Hanks and dressed like a gladiator.
Yeah, I knew he was going to say something about that.
I like to ask about that because everyone looks an experience enough.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. To be honest, I had the time of my life for about 5 years. It was at the time I was actually fishing over on Sutton at Hone. Terry Hearn was over there, and we was having some good fishing over there, really enjoying it. And then right towards my time on Sutton, I went for an interview to be involved in Saving Private Ryan, and I knew a guy that was into acting and stuff, and I said to him, how did you get into it? And he gave me a couple of names of agencies to join. And I rung up this agent and they said, oh, we're not taking no one on till October. And this was like sort of, when was it? Sort of like March, April time. Ring back in October. I said, yeah, no probs. And they said, you got any military experience? And I went, well, yeah, I've done 8 years in the British Army. Like, and I went, oh, brilliant. We've got a project coming up soon. We'll ring you back. This was a Friday. So we'll ring you back Monday. Yeah. Would you be able to come in for an interview? I went, yeah, of course. Anyway, cut a long story short, I went all weekend. I thought they weren't going to ring me back, and then they did on the Monday. And I had to go up to London, Cannon Street. It was like an officer training centre up there, and I turned up thinking I'm going to be one of the only ones there, and there was about 300 people queuing up to go in to go into this great big building, and the doors opened at 12, and a load of about another 200 or 300 came out. And I thought, oh, Christ. And they was all talking about working on EastEnders and London's Burning and loads of other different programmes, and I thought, I'm out of my league here. Anyway, we went in there and we all sat down and we had to fill out all this paperwork, and while they was telling us what was going to happen, what the project was and stuff like that, there was agents walking around, and we was on like tables of 12, and they were tapping us on the shoulder if they wanted you, like if you face fitted, and straight away I got picked. I couldn't believe it. The whole table like scowled at me, and I had to then go and get on a queue to go in for an interview, and this crazy guy called Captain Dale Dye, he's Spielberg's military advisor. He's a really, really lovely bloke, proper old like Vietnam vet, like, you know. And he was dressed up in his full captain's outfit, and I had to go in as if I was still in the army and name, rank, and number and all that. And basically, he was asking me about my military career, and he was asking me a few questions about it and one thing or another. And I said to him, like, when I was in the army, this is what I'd done. I said, and towards the end of my army career, I was an army physical training instructor. And he went, tell me, Hammond. And he said, was you a mean son of a gun? I said, yes, sir, I was the meanest. He went, you're a good soldier. I want you in my movie. He was giving it all that. I was like, what is going on? Like, you know. Anyway, it turned out it was Saving Private Ryan, and I was going to be one of the Germans in it. And it was just such an experience. I mean, I said, then go and get, go to another place in London at a later date and get all my German uniform fitted and one thing or another. And it turned out there was 60 German soldiers on the actual movie, like, and we were split into two sort like platoons of 30, and I was put in charge of one of the platoons of 30. The agency ended up putting me in charge of them, and got some. I mean, I had the time of my life. It was a Spielberg production, and there was no cutting costs. Everything was like full on. The food was amazing. Everything was great about it. It was lovely summertime filming, and we'd done a lot of it in Hatfield. And to be honest, like, we was all running around with proper. I had like an MP40, like a machine gun, and I was running around firing blanks and throwing smoke grenades, and it was just. Absolutely. I mean, if you see the final scene in Saving Private Ryan when they're attacking the bridge, there's Mustang aeroplanes like flying in, dive bombing. There's tanks and Tiger tanks going off and buildings alight. And it was just, it was as real as it could get for me as well. Like, it just seemed like it's what it would have been like. And it was absolutely out of this world. And I'd done that. And that kind of led to loads of other stuff after that. I ended up joining a few more agencies. I worked on Gladiator. I nearly got, I went to do an audition at the Shepperton Studios, and I teamed up with this other guy, and we got taught two fight routines back to back all day long with a wooden shield and a sword. And I found out at the end of it, if we got selected, we was going over to, we was going to be in the arena with Russell Crowe, like doing like the gladiator fighting in the arena. And it was just amazing. We'd have had 5 weeks in Malta and six in Morocco, but unluckily for me, they chose, there was a dispute with Equity, and they took a load of American stunt guys instead. So I was a bit gutted about that, but I still went and was involved in the big fight scene at the beginning against the Huns. That was brilliant. Yeah, and I'd done 5 years of that. I'd done a whole year on Band of Brothers working on that, and that was really good. We had to once again go for an interview with a mad captain, and he remembered me from last time, and he wanted me back on board. And basically there was 20 sort of hardcore main actors in it, and then they picked 20 what they call SA, special ability extra guys, like, and we were in with the 20 actors, and we got little parts, and we were seen all the time, and it was great. I went to Switzerland for 10 days filming Burkus Garden, like Hitler's Nest. It was just 5 years. I think I went away. They gave us some holiday because, I mean, I was working every week, every weekend. So I was earning really good money, putting everything away, not getting a chance to spend it. Yeah. Then they gave us a week's holiday. I think they call it hiatus or something like that. Yeah. And they gave us our wages for that week's holiday. And then I went off to Greece with the missus for a week. And then the day I got back on a Sunday, Monday morning, I was picked up by a chauffeur-driven motor and taken to Stansted Airport and put on a jet with a load of other guys, like a private jet thing. We was flown to, like, Switzerland, and it, you know, when we got there, I was put in a beautiful hotel, and I remember sitting there drinking a glass of Remy and looking out the window, thinking, "Oh, I've cracked it." You know what I mean? I really did think. I mean, I thought one minute I'm in Greece, next minute I'm in Switzerland. I'm being flown over here, but picked up and flown around. And then when we got there, they give us about $800 spending money, like, you know, for our overseas allowance. And I just thought, "Yep, this is me. This is my life. I've cracked it." And in between all that, I was fishing Sutton at home and toll pits, and still, like, you know, really trying to fish. I was doing nights after. When we was at Hatfield, I was flying down to Sutton, flying down to toll pits, which is Junction 18, a bit further down, and getting back for being on set the next day. You know, it's 1 minute you're running around with a machine gun, and the next minute you're sat behind your rods. And I ended up catching Plodder at the same time, like, while I was doing all that running around on film set. And another story, I was after the one big one that I wanted, one of the big ones I wanted out of Sutton at home was Blind Eye. And it was on film. One. Yeah, it was a cracker, mate. Yeah. We was on film set one day, and there was a lot of us. We're all ex-army lads, and we was always fighting and mucking around. I remember I jumped one of my mates once, and he'd butted his foresight of his rifle, and it kind of split me underneath my eye, so nearly could have took my eye out. And I remember having butterfly stitches in it. And the medical person there said, "Look, you're no good being here today. You don't want to get infected. You can go home." And it was about 10 o'clock, I think. So I thought, I know where I'm going. I went straight home, jumped to my van, and I was driving to Sutton at home, thinking in my head, I want to get that blind eye. And I remember it being sort of October, and it was the first sort of coldish sort of wind for the autumn coming. And I remember I got there on the bank, and I was looking across the lake to the other bank. The wind was blowing to the other bank. And I said to the guy, what's been out, you know, and the guy went, oh, fish come from here, something happened there. And I saw one roll in the margins, and it was at bank. I went, that'd do me. So I went around the other bank, fished to where I see the fish roll, and then I'm just sitting there with me, my chin on my hands, like, you know, resting on my knees, looking at the water, the wind blowing into my face, and about 40 yards out, blind eyes come out right to the wrist.
Oh, nice.
I thought, bloody, that was her, like, you know. So I quickly reeled in the rod that was close in, put like a double bottom bait on and a four bait stringer, and cast both rods either side of where the fish showed, and left them there all day. And then a few mates turned up, both sides of me, and they was fishing really close in them swims, and they were getting a lot of liners, hell of a lot of liners. And I remember running to my mate's swim every couple of minutes thinking, like, he's away, but they were liners. And he's going, ain't you going to bring your rods in closer? I said, nah, I'm leaving them there. Well, it shut at 10:30, so, and I remember at 10:05, I just walked just slightly next door to my mate's swim and heard my rod go. And that was her, blind eye, mate. Actually went down there with a near enough blind in my own eye, with the intentions of catching blind eye, and actually bleating caught it. It was crazy. It's mad, isn't it, when it happens like that?
Yeah, that's when the carp gods truly smile on us.
Oh, mate, it was fantastic. I'd done that Band of Brothers for a year, and then at the end of it, I think I'd done a few more. I ended up getting my equity card, and I got myself an agent, and I was becoming, like, really getting into the acting side of things. Yeah. I'd done Bloody Sunday with James Nesbitt, and I was playing one of the paratroopers in that. And it sort of went on and went on, and the more it seemed like the more you got into it, and say the more experienced you got, the less work you got for some reason.
Yeah.
When you was doing just sort of background stuff and military stuff, you can get it all the time, but then you kind of get a bit more choosy and you want to do proper stuff, and to get them proper jobs, you know, that's where I should have gone drama school and done the real sort of acting stuff, you know, and learnt the different arts of acting. You know, everyone thinks it's easy, but it ain't easy. I mean, I got offered a talking part in Band of Brothers, and I had to talk in like a Bronx accent. I couldn't do it, you know what I mean? I would have had to go lessons to talk like that, and I don't know how some of them do it. Some of the English guys play American parts and they're absolutely brilliant there. You think there's American, but I couldn't do it. I would have sounded like John Wayne or Elvis, like, you know. not totally what they wanted.
Yeah.
But yeah, mate, it was great. Wow. So I thought at the end of that, I'd done 5 years, and I thought, well, look, you know, I'm never going to be bleating Tom Cruise. I might as well knock it on the head. And I moved in here, to be honest, where I am now. Yeah. So I moved in here and I thought, oh, I don't really want to do that no more. I've done that and that was great. You know what I mean? It was.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Oh. I've met a lot of actors and a lot of people, and it was really, really good.
That
really
sounds good. Absolutely phenomenal. I think I might look at these agencies myself. I'll see if I can get killed in Game of Thrones or something like that.
Mate, I'll tell you what, like, with your type of look, there's lots of stuff like that, mate. The old Viking look, and you know what I mean? All that
old
sort
Viking.
Of stuff.
I've been called a few things, but I quite like that one.
The Vikings, good, mate. Yeah, I think that's. I'm watching that series on there. I just watched the first episode of Vikings or something. It's really good. I could see you in that, mate. I reckon you'd do all right in that.
You'd look good with a big horny helmet.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, and a big crossbow. Do you?
Yeah.
No, it's brilliant. Brilliant times, mate. Brilliant. It was good. So, yeah, I've done a few things and hope to do a few more, you know?
Yeah.
It was good.
Right. Should we get back to fishy, because we've gone on a proper tangent here?
Let's get back to it. Yeah, mate. Yeah, we don't want people thinking that was like not so good because it went about carp fishing.
Oh no, there is more to life than carp fishing.
Of course there is. Yeah, of course there is.
Only
mate.
Just,
there's,
but
it's that, well, you know, carp fishing is something we all share, and then there's more to life, and it's nice to know sometimes what other people get up to and what they do if it's interesting to you. You know, a lot of people find that interesting. That's probably why you asked. You know what I mean? And not everyone's done it, have they? You know.
No, not at all. Especially, you know, rubbing shoulders with Tom Hanks and, you know, James Nesbitt, etc. You sound tired.
It was. No, mate, last night it was quite a sort of, like, they were so active last night, and I think I didn't get asleep till gone sort of midnight, and then I was woke up again, and then I ended up putting my coat on and standing back out and watching them, and, you know, running them, and I was up at about 6. And I suppose, you know, and I've trained really hard today, I might add, very hard. So,
yeah,
a little bit. But I'm all right. I'm used to it, mate. That's all right. Not a problem.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I'm starting to I went through a phase of, you know, in my teens and 20s of, you know, being a bit of a fitness freak. But when I turned 40 late last year and, You know, it starts affecting. I remember when around about the time I was fishing pit two at Elstow, and that's it. I was unstoppable. You know, even you know, it's like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, a fish has buffed to the other side. That's it. I'm moving.
Nowadays, you have to be fairly fit to do all that, don't you?
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly. Nowadays, a fish buffs at 2 in the morning. I just think, oh,
cast to it.
Yeah,
if you can.
Yeah, I've bought myself some 13-foot rods, so I'm getting closer.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Brilliant. But,
well, we've been going on for a while. This has been, I've really, really enjoyed listening to this, Jerry.
Yeah? Is there anything, how long have we been going there? About 50 minutes?
Yeah, about 53. We're not far off the hour mark. And
no, is there anything else you want to throw at me while we've still got a bit of time?
Well, what are your plans for your future fishing? Is any the big kippers you've got your sights on?
Yeah, I've always... Yeah, always got a target or a fish I'd love to catch. I mean, I was over on Shallow Lagoon last year. Absolutely, really, really loved it. I loved the place, loved the fishing, loved the lake. I'm just having a break from it this year. I've had a couple of other good tickets come up, and I'm going to kind of put the lagoon on the back burner just for a little while, and then I'm going to get back over there. I just like these lakes I've been trying to. I mean, I've got a Vinitrol ticket. I've probably told you the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
That starts soon, and I wanted a ticket on there for long before I was going to fish over the shallow, and I've never really sort of got halfway through a lake and then stopped, but like I'm definitely going back 100%. I mean, I love the fishing there, like we spoke about the other day. But in the meantime, I've got another club lake down in Chichester, and I'm hoping to get my night ticket on there this year, which is another really good lake. It's over the road to Vinitrol, so I've got two fantastic waters. It's quite a travel for me, but if I'm going to go down there, I'll do a couple of days. Like, and there's two fantastic waters right on top of each other that I've been waiting for quite a long time to get onto. So now I'm actually getting on there rather than waste any more time. I'm gonna get on with it. And I like to have something to go for. And, you know, there's some cracking fish in Vinitrol, and there also is some real stunners in the lake over the road. So I've got everything in one little area, and quite excited really to get down there. I'm just sort of at the minute I'm fishing here because I've got my ticket don't start on there just yet. And while I'm sort of waiting, I've sort of like been having a dabble. I was over Thorny Weir last week.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was last. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. I'm losing track of time. I had a really good session, mate. Just that there's a channel that the fish seem to get in at this time of year quite a lot. And I ended up with 8 fish. I had 5 the first night and then 3 the next night. And absolute stunners. Like, I had a couple of linears and a couple of fully scaleds. I had a 34. All the rest were like 20s and that. But it was such good fishing. Really, really enjoyed myself. And it kind of gets me sort of even keener to keep going, like, you know. And in between waiting to go over to Vinitrol and down Chichester way, I'll always have a dabble on my lake, especially when they're vulnerable at the minute or they've woke up and they're catchable, like, you know. Because they're not always. I thought I'd give it a go. And it'd be rude not to. I can see my ass from here, you know. So yeah, that's my plans, mate. I'm gonna be on there for like April onwards. I normally, once a fish spawn, I tend to sort of slow down when we're fishing for a month or so.
Yeah, give me a rest.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to fish for spawned out carp. I like to fish for carp when they're in their prime, not when they're sort of tired and worn out. I'd rather wait till later. So if I'm fishing a lake and they've spawned on there, I won't fish it for a while. I'll give it a break, and then I'll just do other stuff, get into my training and potter around the fishery, and you know, if I'm not fishing, I'm training. So I've got sort of two hobbies anyway, and and keeps me busy, keeps me on my toes, mate.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. How much time do you get to fish? Is it like a couple of nights a week, or?
You know, I could do as much as I like. I'm probably made us stronger in our relationship. Like, you know, we've been together, Christ, I must be with her 27 years, been married now.
It's been
fantastic, and we're still in love as much as we were then, you know, like now as we were then, like years ago. And the fishing hasn't, I'm lucky, a lot of people can't go and they're not allowed to go, and I can't understand it. I've never been, my missus has always let me go fishing, like, you know. She sees my daughter a lot, and I've got a little grandson now, so I'm actually a bleating granddad. Makes me sound old. But, yeah, and that keeps her busy. That's like her hobby. And I can go fishing. And yeah, she tells me to go if I don't go. But to be honest, like, I only, a lot of the time, if I'm here, I can fish here, and in the day I can reel in and go and do stuff. You know, I can go and cut grass and do jobs and, yeah, you know, do what I want, go to the gym. But if I'm away from home, I don't like being away from home too long. Years ago, I would have done as long as I could get away with. But now, I tend to sort of get on the bank, and if I do a 48-hour, I think, you know what, I'm ready to go home now. Unless it's happening. If it ain't happening, what's the point of staying there? You're just sort of using up more and more and more time. You might as well go home and, you know, be at home with the family, and then think, right, now, next time if I get on, I might stay a bit longer. But generally, two in the spring, three days, like a week in the spring. If I'm here every night. I pop in and get my dinner and say hello and come back over here. I love it. It's brilliant. And you would do exactly the same, mate, if you was here.
Oh, I'm sure I would.
And so would everyone else.
Yeah, and yeah, that's that's great what you say. Oh, you've been with your wife for so long. And I'm in the same situation. I consider myself extremely lucky. I've been with the same lass since I was 19. And
yeah, brilliant.
Know, exactly the same as we were back then. You know,
exactly, mate. Yeah, see, that's why I've got grandchildren. We had our kids so young. That's my excuse. I think my missus was 19 when she fell pregnant. So yeah, that makes my children young and me a young granddad, which is all right.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, we've been kind of the other way around. We've been trying for a while, which is bloody hard work nowadays. So.
That's good training, mate. Keep at it.
Yeah, it gets me out of breath.
Keeps the old heart rate up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeps definitely. You fit. But,
anyway, on that note, we're going away from fishing again to
yes, no other problem, pursuits. Mate. Yeah.
And this has been one of my favourite chats we've had for the podcast.
Are you sure? So. I hope so. No. I hope you've enjoyed it anyway. I have.
Oh, it is. We've gone all over the place, literally.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
The only thing that's been missing is a screaming run while we've been on.
I know. Well, to be honest, last night they was really... I mean, I've been looking at the water the whole time, like, you know, and last night they were really active. I've seen one show out here. But having said that, it's quite dark in front of me, and there is the odd ripple coming in. There's one now. And the water's flat calm, so something's moving out there. I can't quite tell whether that's birds or not, but the one definitely showed sort of halfway out to where I'm... Well, not far from where I'm fishing on one of the rods. But this time last night, I mean, it's 9 o'clock now, they was going a lot more. And the amount of energy they were using last night, I expected a few bites, but nothing happened until about midday today when mate next door had his 43. So there's always a chance, mate. I'd just like to catch one of the ones I ain't caught, because... you know, there's a lot of younger fish coming through in here now, and even though they're young, some of them are in their sort of mid 30 plus, like, you know, and absolute stunners, like, and I've sort of not really caught any. I think I've caught one or two of them, and there's like 28 to 30 of them that's been put in here out like from way back, you know, but they're still young fish compared to the others, and I haven't really caught any of them, it's good because I've got all of them to still fish for, basically, and they're getting bigger all the time, so it's great. It's like an ongoing, you know, thing on here for me.
Yeah, just a brilliant continuous love affair on your doorstep.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you have to come over and have another look, because you ain't seen it for a long while.
No, I've only seen it that once, and I was impressed back then.
Yeah, it's nice in the summer, isn't it? It looks beautiful. Every lake does. I mean, most lakes do. We've got a lot of big weeping willows here and a lot of pads and stuff, and it's so much nicer. The winter, I don't like the winter. I don't like all the mud and all the crap, but, like, love the summer and the spring. It's brilliant. You know, definitely have to come over, mate.
Yeah, well, that's something I'll definitely take. I might wait till June the 16th and bring me along trotting rod.
Yeah, come over. Yeah, mate. Yeah, I've got a nice little swim for you to have a go in. You'll like it.
Oh, sweet. 4-pound perch and 7-pound chub.
Yes, mate. Well, my best out of here, I caught years ago, and I actually caught it in August, and it was an 8-10. That was the best one I had.
8-10.
Yeah, 8-10, Martin Boulder and Matt Hayes, they used to come. Well, Matt still comes over in towards the end of the season. Martin Boulder used to get over here quite a bit. Everyone's had a go. Chris Yates has been over here. He's fished this lake, like my syndicate lake. Yeah, he was great. He was actually, we had an Indian, it was quite funny, really. was all sort of sitting in behind the swim in the shade, and Hugh Miles was there, and he had his Kelly kettle, and we was there drinking coffee and eating oatmeal biscuits, and I'm laying on the grass with them thinking, this is ridiculous. It's like something out of like one of their films on Redmire back in the day, like, you know. And then Chris Shates is all dressed in his tweed and everything, and he's actually fishing with this old sort of split cane rod with a like a quill on it, and he had an Indian meal the night before, and he had a lump of naan bread on the end, and I was up the tree above him watching, and this bloody great carp come up, and he pulled out of it. I was like, my God, on a bit of naan bread on a quill float, like, you know what I mean? I thought only he can do that.
Oh, that is quality.
Yeah, I got some good photos, actually. I put a photo on Facebook quite a few years ago, and there's a picture of him fishing, a really good silhouette fishing picture of him in his big mauve jumper and his hat. And I put up there, I said, I bloody caught this bloke poaching over my lake today. I said, looked like a vagrant. I said, he's like a tramp. I said, I don't know who he is or who he thought he was. I said, but I caught him poaching in the corner over there. Like, I said, I bloody chased him off. I set the dogs on him. Some bloke come up and went, you are joking. Do you know who that is? I went, nah. I said, he's gone now. I said, the dog chased him off. He went, that's bloody Chris Yates. I was like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
good stories.
Oh, brilliant.
So big thank you to my old pal, Jerry Hammond. Fished with him a couple of times on Kevin Nash's Church Lake. One time we did a session together. Great guy. And interesting too. So we do a co-promotion with Carp Talk, and it's the bumper spring issue this week, isn't it, Mark?
It is. That's absolutely full of features. You know, the digital version, $249, which is Saturday. Are we going to be out on Saturday for a change?
I think there's a good chance this could be released on Saturday, yeah. I've got a few things to do this weekend.
It's on Saturday.
But yeah, it's a packed bumper issue. And there was a new 60 caught this week. We mentioned it last week. There's all the story about that. Captain Jack from Home Fen, £60 2 ounce. That's in there.
I believe that's the same fish that his old friend Ian McMillan caught on the Shimano video.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, how big was it then?
What a fish. 56 from memory.
Well,
could be wrong. I'm sure Ian's a listener. I'm sure he'll correct us. We've it's not the only lump in there either. We've got arguably the best common in the UK, the wood from Spitfire Pool. I didn't know that had been out.
Yeah, I saw it the other week, the wood common, yeah, Rich Wilby's water. And I'm wondering if there's another 50 from Welly in there. I reckon there probably is.
It's a mandatory weekly Welly 50. Weekly Welly Whackers.
Weekly Welly Whacker, yeah.
It should be a column.
Yeah, there's a couple of epic sessions, a feature from James Cotty on the Essex Manor, loads of other big fish, Frynin's been throwing them up, Mid-Kent's Fisheries, tons and tons of other venues. Ali Hamidi's in this week's Bumper Issue as well, talking about the second series of The Big Fish Off, which gets underway on ITV4 this Thursday night. And we'll get Ali on next week, I think, to talk about that. I forgot to ring him, actually. We should have had him on this show. But some worrying news for the Spanish carping industry as well, as the government adds carp to the invasive species list. That's not good for the Spanish carpers, especially after that massive Spanish carp we saw the other week, didn't we?
Yeah, I think that's a bit like shutting the stable doors after the horse has bolted, don't you think?
Yeah,
when all the carp are pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, well, let's hope they don't introduce a catch and kill policy. But check Carp Talk for the latest info on that. Yeah, there's some other features in there as well. There's a big 6-page feature called The Golden Generation, where we catch up with some of the 1990s Sparshot students who have helped shape the modern carp scene.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I like the sound of that, actually. Probably a lot of the people that are responsible for the Yateley North Lake stockings and stuff we spoke about last time. And obviously, I wonder if it was people like Viv Shears and stuff. I'm interested. I'm going to get Carp Talk this week, and I'm going to have a look. Crow is in there as well. He explains why some carp baits have a knack of catching the bigger fish. Briggs is in there on Rainbow Lake. Neil Spooner does a quick change chod rig. And there's competitions as well. Here we go, Mark.
Try enter that one.
Yes, you need to enter this one because...
A set of three Nash R3 alarms with receiver. That could... that'd sway me towards a
Yeah.
Winning them.
There's 700 quid's worth of Avid Bivvies to be won, and a £500 holiday in France. A holiday of a lifetime, apparently. That's all in this week's Carp Talk. You can get it online on Saturday, which is 3 days earlier than the printed copy. It's from pocketmags.com, and you can view it on your Apple device, your Android, your PC, or whatever. And obviously the normal printed bumper edition is coming out on Tuesday as well, and you can find out where you can buy it on the Carp Talk website. We'll put the link for the Carp Talk website in the notes, or you can order it from your local news agents, whatever. But yeah, get yourself the spring bumper edition this week, and get everybody's whistles wetted for the upcoming fish. The weather's warm, there's fish just starting to get caught now. I've seen quite a few fish on my Facebook this week. It's time, isn't it, Mark? We need to be out there doing it.
It's time. I think the next time I'm actually going to be out carping is probably the Cromwell Social, so to see a rake of fish out then, that would really make me happy.
Yeah, Matt Rhodes has been on Cromwell this week, and I'm sure he had like four yesterday. I'm assuming he's fishing one of the shallower water pegs. That if you are coming on our Cromwell Social, there's one particular quarter of the lake that... there's a good four or five pegs in that quarter of the lake, but one of those pegs is somebody's going to have a decent hit out of them, I think. I think the timing's perfect. Everywhere's just starting to fish, and I think there'll be hopefully a PB or two caught that week.
Yeah, that weekend. That'll give us something to talk about, and hopefully we'll get some good film footage of it as well.
Yeah, let's hope so. We'll do some live Carpcast on the bank.
Yeah, I've not put anything on the Carpcast YouTube channel for quite a while yet. I still keep getting notifications through, you know, 2-3 times a week of people subscribing still.
Ah, well, we'll get something together, won't we, for this? But yep, that's it for this week. We didn't mention our competition that we're doing, aren't we?
Oh, get it.
We're doing. We haven't got a name for this competition, have we? But basically, it involves you.
Carpcast Clothing Comp.
Yeah, the Carpcast Clothing Comp. We're going to be giving away a free space on our Nash Royston Lake Social, where you get a chance to fish Royston with myself, Alan Blair of Urban Banks fame, and Mark. Possibly Frank Warwick as well, if he's free. He said if he's not working abroad, he will come as well. It's an exclusive chance to fish the Nash Royston Lakes before it opens to the general public. It's in the middle of August, and we're going to be giving away a free space on that. And Mark, how do people win?
Well, you win by having a picture of yourself wearing some sort of, you know, Carpcast clothing. You know, in any sort of situation, with a bit of a story, something that's different, entertaining. It could be a capture with a good story. You know, you could have climbed Everest with wearing just your Carpcast hat.
I spoke to somebody the other day who listens to our show, who is going up Everest.
Really?
Yeah, we might actually get the Everest picture. He was laughing.
In just the hat.
I don't know what he's going to get, but he needs to take something with him. But he said he was chuckling when he was listening to us saying just a photo that's a bit special. It could be a special fish. It could be a special place. It could be the top of Everest. And he said, "Oh, well, I'm a fisherman. I'm going up Everest soon." It's got to be something different. It could be, you know, on stage with Slayer, a concert, but any bit of Carpcast attire, a hoodie, a t-shirt, a hat, you can get all that stuff from our website, www.thecarpcast.com. There's other stuff there. You can listen to all our podcasts. You can download the podcast. You can subscribe to the extra content, which is just full of stories from people like Kevin Nash, Alan Blair, Daryl Peck, Johnny Mack, Ronnie DeGroote. Frank Warwick's got some fantastic stories on there. There's three of them out now. There's three sort of 2.5 to 3 hour episodes out on there. You can subscribe for only £35 for a year's worth. Or you can just individually purchase the back copies if you want. www.thecarpcast.com. Get your clothing there. Just keep in touch with us. You can subscribe to get the latest information. Just subscribing is completely free if you just sign up. Check out thecarpcast.com. Get yourself some clothing. Send us a picture and you could win a free trip with us to Nash Lake Royston before anyone else can fish it. But that's it. That's it for us this week. I will still be decorating by next week's show. But until then, we'll see you later.